Behold the voice of God.
For those of you who don't know me officially, my name is Amanda Waller.
And I am Aaron Mosh, host of Task Force X.
What, we some kind of suicide squad?
Well, yeah, that and...
Checkmate.
Task Force X is a podcast that tells the stories of John Ostrander's Suicide Squad and Paul Kupperberg's Checkmate from the late 80s, early 90s.
I want to build a team of some bad people who can do some good.
And that's what Suicide Squad is. While Checkmate is a team of good people doing some good, my mission here is to chronicle each and every title in all the books that Suicide Squad and Checkmate appeared in during that era.
We're the U.S. government. You're going to start a blog and expose us?
Well, a blog and a headcast, Amanda.
Those scumbags are trying to screw me.
Not at all, Amanda. Just trying to help everyone else discover the joy of the Suicide Squad and Checkmate. Anywho, hope you guys have as much fun with these comics as I did when I first read them. Oh, so many years ago.
Mother.
That's enough of that, Amanda. Let's go and start the show.
I didn't believe the stories.
Nobody does. Remember, I'm watching.
I see everything.
And welcome to this special edition of Task Force X. But we're not going to look at one of the comics. We're actually going to take a break. And we're actually going to do a commentary track of the Suicide Squad movie. I know I've given my thoughts on here before, but I figured, you know, it's time to sit down and actually watch it with you guys. And I didn't want to do it alone, so I dragged some other poor sucker. I mean, some other to this with me. You know what? If I'm going to have to be tortured with this, I'm not going alone. And we'll get to that. But first, let me introduce Robert Myers.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me on. My only requirement being on a podcast, there has to be some Robin thing, and the word Robin appears on the screen, so I guess there's 164th Robin in here, so I'm good.
Well, there you go. See that? Yeah, no, you know.
I'm kidding. Yeah. Thanks for having me
on. This movie. Oh, sorry. anyways, so you mentioned something about Robin. Do you like Robin?
He's all. I mean, he's all right. I mean, I guess. As I refer to him, he's. Batman is Robin's sidekick, and that usually gets a boo. You know, I say, oh, you mean Batman? That's Robin's sidekick. And then people are like, what?
Well, before you throw, why don't you tell people, you know, where you're from and...
Yeah, I've got a little show. We just celebrated our five-year anniversary, which I can't believe I've been officially doing podcasting just a little over 5 years. Robin, Everyone Loves the Drake. We take a look at the 1998, essentially the 2000, I got too many Robins going on here. The 90s Robin 2000 comic will be started in 98 with his origin. And then, like I said, in December of this past December was the 5 year anniversary. And then I decided to do an offshoot from Everyone Loves the Drake. And since I like the title so much, we are now going into Everyone Loves Young Justice. So that first episode just launched this previous Wednesday. And we're taking a look at the, obviously, the Young Justice, not only the 1998 Peter David run, but we're also, we just reviewed the Brian Michael Bendis Young Justice, and then we're going to start getting into the animated show and tie-in comics. So I thought I would kind of keep a hold of Tim Drake, and we'll look at another facet and just kind of expound on him. So wherever you find Tim Drake, that's where you can find me on those two shows, and we're part of the Batman Universe .net podcast network.
And I've got to see, I haven't listened to the new one yet, the Young Justice one.
That just dropped. It was kind of like with everything, like iTunes, you need like five episodes before it drops. You can listen live over at the Batman Universe. It is available day of release on Google Play and Stitcher, but you know, iTunes likes to be a stick in the mud. They want to have, you know, four or five episodes before it's released. So probably by episode six, you can binge listen six episodes, but the first one has just come out. So.
But I do love your Everyone Loves the Drake show. It's a great show.
Oh, thank you very much.
We've talked, but yeah, here a little while back, you did the audio, what do you call it? The audio play.
Yeah, the radio drama, yeah, or audio drama. Yeah.
Love that comic, that series, and I thought your guys' audio thing was fantastic.
Thanks. It was a little idea that I had. I think when I very first started, I did a book that I absolutely loved. It's a Fisher Price like a cassette book, you kind of like a read along book. It was Batman and Robin in the Case of the Laughing Sphinx. And it's just about that cheesy with the dialogue. So for like a zero episode, I read it and did all those voices and just put just typical Batman music, you know, from different movies and stuff in there. And that got a decent response. And I thought, well, maybe I ought to try like doing a radio broadcast production. I think at the last count, I was tallying the hours up. I think I have 215 hours of editing for the audio drama, just little things, but it turned out really good. And then the turnaround for that, we actually got to interview James Tynan, and I sent it to him thinking, oh, I wonder if I'm going to get sued for for doing this or whatever. And he could not have been more pleasant, and was just really like in awe. He's like, I can't believe you turned something that I wrote into something like this. He's like, I listened to it twice. It's effing awesome. You know, is what he kept saying. So that was the biggest praise. I was like, we can end the show right here. We're done. You know, so I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, it was great. I love that. Anyways, but yeah, well, we're not here to talk about Robin. Well, maybe we'll talk about him briefly as the show goes on. We're here to talk about the Suicide Squad. Let me ask you, Rob, are you a fan of the Suicide Squad previously? And if so, from when did you have you read the Suicide Squad? What's your history on the Suicide Squad?
My Suicide Squad history kind of started with the New 52. Probably like right after I graduated high school, I started playing in bands. I'm a drummer as well. So my comic money started turning into drumming money. And then, you know, the drum kits got bigger, the comics got smaller. So I would pick up, you know, just the typical Batman comics and, you know, was aware of the Suicide Squad. But I think before the New 52, I don't know if I could have named three members. I was pretty sure Deadshot was there. I had no idea if Harley Quinn was an original member. So when the New 52 hit, actually, it was the Arkham games that kind of got me back in because they had the tie-in comics going on. So I'd go into the shops and – you know, the guy was like saying, hey, this Flashpoint story is going on. So I kind of got in just with the main Flash title and thinking this may be a really good entry point and kind of getting back into comics. So I started reading a lot of stuff, and the Suicide Squad was kind of right there in my entry point for them in the New 52 and going, well, I didn't realize Harley Quinn was on the team. And like every good comic collector does, you start going backwards and go, oh, that's kind of where the core is. So I did. Once the New 52 was what it was, I was like, maybe let's go backwards and see what I missed, or, you know, how good was it beforehand or poor or whatever. So I kind of bebopped back and forth. So now having, you know, the New 52 under our belts or under Rebirth, I've been kind of – I haven't stayed with the Suicide Squad as much, but when they're kind of getting tied into other things like they got tied into the death of the family. I was reading those tie-in books that went in there. And then I would read, you know, three or four issues past to kind of, you know, tie up whatever loose plot threads that they had introduced into those stories. So I've been kind of like a tangential, if that's the right word I want to use, like on the peripheral with the Suicide Squad. But when a Batman or a main Bat family character gets involved, that's usually when I kind of hop on and hop off.
So have you read any of the Ostinger Suicide Squad from back in the late 80s, early 90s?
Maybe an issue two here or there. I know that those were – a lot of people say, oh, that's a really good series to get started on. But I just – I never dove – did a deep dive into that. It's on my, you know, reading list to do. I just haven't had the opportunity to – or the time, I guess, is probably the better word.
Well, they have trade paperbacks. There's like four or five trade paperbacks out that I'm aware of. It collects the first 20, 30 issues of it. So definitely I could recommend those.
Cool.
In my opinion, that was a very much better series than what we're getting right now. But again, I am getting old, so get off my lawn. All right. Well, again, we're here to talk about we're going to do a commentary track for Suicide Squad, the movie. So before we get started with that, a little, again, we found out about your backstory on the Suicide Squad. When the movie came out, what were your initial thoughts when you heard about the Suicide Squad movie coming out? Were you interested in it or?
Yeah, I was interested in it just, I think, as well, I would think a lot of DC fans are like, okay, finally, DC is putting their films on table. We're going to have a shared continuity. So to me, I was kind of just with what little I knew of the Suicide Squad up to this point, I was kind of thinking, okay, maybe this is going to be our Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, I remember my wife and I were going to that movie. She's like, what are the Guardians of the Galaxy? I was like, a tree, a raccoon, and a green girl. That's all I knew of, you know, right. Guardians. So when she was asking about Suicide Squad, I was like, Will Smith is in it and Harley Quinn. You know, I knew the Deadshot characters, but it wasn't – I just knew them separately. Like I knew Deadshot separately, Harley Quinn separately. I said, as a team, I don't know. But I said, this may be DC's way of going, hey, we've got some obscure characters that are really good that when everybody goes, you know – thinking, all right, we're going to do Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, Flash, you know, do all the big heavy hitters. And then you do a Suicide Squad movie that's a villain-oriented based. I was like, this is pretty interesting. And I've always said DC has the best villains across, you know, all of comicdom. I know some Marvel fans may be jumping up and down, but I think you can do a team movie like this and – you know, everybody likes to root for the bad guy, you know, secretly, like, oh, can I get away with it? And this is a team that's built kind of on that premise that I was like, I think this is going to work. And you can do the reverse and you can have a Batman drop in. You could have a Flash drop in or whoever the hero is. They're not the focal point. The villain is. So I was really intrigued by it. And this was an excuse to get to know some of these characters that I've only just seen in like a who's who entry of a book.
Very good. Well, let's go ahead and I'm watching on Blu-ray. We're watching the – for anyone out there listening, we're watching the Suicide Squad extended cut. I've got it on Blu-ray. Rob's watching it on Vudu. We've got it queued up. It's at the six-second mark on our thing. We got the Warner Brothers logo on the screen. I've got to walk over and start mine. Give me just 1 second. But before we get started, anything else that you wanted to say or anything else?
No, I'm kind of eager to watch this again. It's other than when this came out on, you know, Blu-ray and DVD, other than watching it probably once or twice, I haven't seen it since. So I'm kind of curious to see how it kind of holds up for me and, you know, where my ranking is with it. I know where it is currently. I want to see if it moves or slides any farther down.
All right. Well, I'm going to start mine. So I'm going to hear you, Rob. I'm going to hit play online, starting now.
All right.
Oh, have you heard me? I got mine started.
Seeing the DC logo spin there?
Yeah.
I thought that was clever.
Yeah, yeah, it's starting out really good. Bell Rev. They don't usually in the comic have that paint all over the fence, but I can give it that. So, Will Smith is Deadshot. What are your thoughts on that?
I thought this was cool. I've always been a sucker for Will Smith. I wasn't one of those that's like, no, Floyd Lawton needs to be white, you know, or can be whatever. I think the Deadshot character can kind of work that way, and I always liked Will Smith's cadence when he speaks. He just kind of has that, at least with Floyd, he's got that arrogant attitude that he knows he's good. And like if he could, he probably just shot this guy looking through the cell wall right here in the eye, you know.
Very much so. Yeah, see, I am one of those that I dislike race changes, whether it's black to white to black or whatever it may be. I prefer – like, well, it's just a comic book character. Well, it's not just a comic book character to me. To me, especially Suicide Squad, I've read right after I started reading comics for, you know, back in the late 80s. So to me, this is like part of my family.
And I do too. I know he's not in here, but let's like making Wally West at first an African-American. I'm like, I've got nothing against that, but that's not who the character is. As we're talking over Harley Quinn's entrance in the film here. But I'm like, if the character's supposed to be Asian, then let him be Asian. Don't go changing stuff. But this wasn't one that really upset me. I'm like, okay, it's Will Smith. I can get behind it.
And see, like you, I'm a big Will Smith fan. I love old school rap. That's my music of choice. I love Will Smith, the Fresh Prince, his TV show, most movies he's done. But especially being Will Smith at this point, being a bigger star. When I first heard he was Will Smith, won the race thing. Plus, I'm afraid Will Smith, it's going to be Will Smith, not Floyd Lawton.
Yeah, I could see that.
A lot of actors are that way. We got Harley Quinn on the screen, Margot Robbie. I'd seen her in things, but I didn't realize who she was until here.
We had watched The Wolf of Wall Street before this, and I think there was another one that she was in. So when they said Margot Robbie, I knew instantly who she was. I'm like, oh, okay. I think I could see her as Harley Quinn.
Yeah, so I watched a time travel movie with her in it.
Okay.
I forget the name of it now. I just watched her a couple weeks ago. But I didn't know who Margot Robbie was at the time. I watched it there. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's her. Okay. I thought Margot Robbie did a great job as Harley Quinn.
Yeah. I think she's one of the standout performances in this.
a whole lot crazy.
That's a good line.
Yeah. I don't care for her being in this just because I think, again, she wasn't in the original Suicide Squad comics. I think she – when you involve Harley Quinn, you've got to involve the Joker, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But
yeah.
I think that she detracts from the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Because it becomes more Harley Quinn in the Suicide Squad, which so I don't like.
Yeah, our reference to BBS right there.
Yeah,
and that's one of those two. Like, it is Harley Quinn DC's Deadpool, where they're just gonna try and fit her in anywhere that they can because hey, everybody loves Harley Quinn. Yeah. Let's put her in the Suicide Squad. I don't, knowing what I know, the Suicide Squad now, I don't associate her. I don't think she's a good fit for the team. I think she can handle a thing on her own and just be fine on her own. It doesn't need.
Well, yeah, but for the Suicide Squad, she's way too unpredictable.
Yeah.
And there's been some stories. I've been reading the newer Suicide Squad, and I've been doing – I don't know. She's too unpredictable for the Suicide Squad. Amanda Waller, she would use her, but not as much as they've been using her, I think.
Yeah.
Speaking of Amanda Waller, in the early 2000s, they tried making Amanda Waller more skinnier, more of a supermodel type. I dislike that.
Same here.
Waller should be a short, heavyset black woman, almost as wide as she is tall.
I love this right here, going through all of their credentials. Almost like a little splash page for each of the characters. So this is a good setup that they're going to start running through each one of the principal characters in here, give them your backstory. If you went into this movie going, I don't know who this is.
Yeah, no, it's a very good setup. I didn't listen, the exterminator calling about your rat problem. I'm waiting.
And this was something too with, Floyd of going, okay, this is Will Smith. How much are you going to put Will Smith in the mask?
Yeah.
And not go, well, we've got Will Smith, but we've got him undercover for 90% of the movie. We're going to have to see Will.
Yeah. And that's my other fear. They don't want to use the mask because for one, it may be kind of silly looking. For another, yeah, you're paying Will Smith how many millions of dollars to do this? Will Smith wants his face on the screen.
Right.
He's doing good for what he's given, though.
Yeah.
Awesome problems with him later on, but that's the writing more than Will. At least they do give us the mask there. I would have preferred if he'd been on, had it on the entire mission, but again, you're paying for Will Smith.
Right. What do you think of Viola Davis as Amanda Waller?
My perfect choice, in my opinion, for Amanda Waller is CCH Pounder. She's done the voice for her. I've always lobbied for her to be Amanda Waller. Viola Davis, I think she did a damn good job.
Yeah.
Again, I've got some problems with her writing a bit later on we'll get to, but as far as the actress playing the role, she is Amanda Waller for me. She's, you know, not quite as perfect as Pounder would be, but if I can't have CCH Pounder, yeah, I'll take Viola Davis. She did a great job. I know she's on a TV show, How to Get Away with Murder, something like that.
Yeah.
I never watched that. I watched the one, Scandal, one before that, but I never did watch that one, so I'm not familiar with her besides her role here.
I was glad that this scene wasn't spoiled for me up in the movie. I remember seeing, and I was trying not to look at too many like set photos, but I remember seeing Ben on screen, kind of not on screen, but on set, and they had like a big tarp around him going, oh, he's going to be Batman. But all the trailers, you ever saw him on the car.
Right.
So he's probably not going to be in the actual movie as Batman. You know, here he is. This is a great scene.
Yeah.
I mean, the first on-screen meeting of Deadshot and Batman.
Yeah, that's very nice. It's Batman and Deadshot have a history. Deadshot first showed up over Detective Comics.
And it's blanking on me, the Ben Affleck, Kevin Smith movie that Will Smith was in. It's their second film together. Or something girl. Jersey Girl.
Jersey Girl. There you go.
Yeah.
Where Ben Affleck played Will Smith's publicist.
Yes, that's right. That's
smeared
right.
Him at the beginning of it. Like, you're just a rapper. We ain't going to be no actor.
Right.
Threw him the hole and threw away the hole.
And here comes the only Robin reference.
Yeah.
Right there, the murder of Robin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very quick, very – you can miss that easily with everything else going on.
Yeah. That's cool to see, you know, Arkham Asylum and see Harley Quinn here, the Dr. Harley Quinzel.
Yeah, and I think Margot Robbie does a great job as Harley Quinn. I kind of threw up a little bit of my mouth because of the Joker. I hate this version of the Joker.
Yeah, I mean, it's not my favorite version.
The damage tattoo across the forehead is a little too much on the nose for the Joker.
Yeah.
I hate the grill. And I just don't care for the way that, what's his name, Jared Leto?
Yeah.
Is that this one? I didn't care for the way he portrayed him. The way, the voice, it just was very a Joker to me.
Yeah, he seems like he's stoned. Half the time, you know, like the Joker would not be the character that is going to seem he's playing the out of control part, but he is very much in control. And Leto's Joker seems like he's not sure one minute for the next. Like even Heath Ledger's Joker would say, you know, he likes chaos. Right. He doesn't really. That Joker is very methodical, very planned out. This Joker literally does seem chaotic. Like he could shoot you in the head or fart in front of you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like he looks like he's just blitzed. So as the movie went on, I kind of grew to tolerate it as probably
yeah.
Where I was at. Like, all right, this is the Joker, so it is what it is.
Though I do like the interaction between him and Harley Quinn. This is very much of their origin, how, you know, she's kind of tortured by him and I love that scene right there. The Harley Quinn costume with Joker dancing.
This scene, I don't know what it is about this scene. This is where I'm thinking, like, did he just have a fifth of Jack right before he's talking? He just kind of goes loony here for a little bit, but maybe he's just loony over Harley.
Well, they're calling him more of a gangster Joker. Again, that's not the Joker. Well, it's a modern interpretation. No, you don't. I hate that tattoo on his hand.
Oh, same here. I'm like, come on.
In fact, I made a Facebook comment here the other day on one of the groups I'm on that I disliked a lot of modern interpretations of Joker. I've forgotten that he's supposed to have a rictus grin. That's part of his character. He's got this grin that's permanently plastered on his face. And this was kind of their nod to that, the tattoo on the hand, but I just did not like that.
Yeah.
And there's that whole thing you're talking about with the Joker, you take a shot of Jack or maybe some Coke or something. I don't know what's.
But then in like, you know, 4 seconds, they have like this, like, oh, there's Harley and the Joker. And that just kind of quickly fades away. I think Harley stays in the Joker presence a little more. But you're talking about the tattoos, like everybody's got them.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people nowadays have tattoos, but I don't know. I think the tattoos were a way bit too much for a lot of this movie.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of tattoos. I don't mind on the gangsters, but yeah, I don't like seeing the tattoos on the Joker. I don't care to see Harley all tatted up. It's just not. And I was going to say earlier when they showed her in the Harlequin outfit, again, call me an old man, but I prefer the Harlequin outfit.
Yeah.
Compared to the slutty Harlequin we get.
Yeah, with the trailers that we saw, I thought this was going to be our only Batman sequence and that it was probably just going to be a stunt double. And if Ben was in the movie, it would only be as Bruce Wayne. We probably wouldn't physically see him as Batman. Would always be a stunt guy. So I was pleasantly surprised that, you know, we get, you know, two Affleck Batman scenes in this.
See, the first one with Deadshot was kind of surprising. I didn't expect that one. But
right. From
what I've seen, I try to avoid a lot of trailers just because a lot of times they'll show too much. This movie here, since I do a Suicide Squad podcast, I watched all the trailers and talked about them. So I expected to see Batman in this sequence here.
Yeah.
With the Joker. Maybe Batman
again. I mean, just being a fan of Batman, getting to see Batman and Joker and Harley Quinn, you know, in a movie. I mean, if you would have told me 10 years ago we were going to have Harley Quinn in a movie, I'd have said you're absolutely crazy. You know, but here's Batman carrying Harley Quinn to the car.
Well, heck, 5 years ago you told me we'd have a Suicide Squad movie. I told you you're crazy.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Batman rescuing her and Joker dying in quotes.
Yeah.
Captain Boomerang. Again, I love the character Captain Boomerang. Fetishes Pink Unicorn. I blame Deadpool for that. I wonder how much this is from Deadpool being such a... Because, again, he had that unicorn or horse war was he had.
Right.
I wonder how much this was because of that. I love the character of Captain Boomerang, but this guy here, he's more like a soccer hooligan.
Yeah.
And I don't care for this Flash. I have commented on that elsewhere.
I actually don't mind him as the Flash. He really kind of won me over in Justice League. Seeing the images before of what the suit was going to look like, I'm like, I don't know, because I was used to Grant Gustin.
Right.
And then by the end of Justice League, I was like, you know what? I'll watch a movie with him as the Flash.
Yeah.
Diablo here was a character that I had no reference for whatsoever. So I was coming into a clean slate here.
Yeah, I wasn't that familiar with El Diablo. They use Killer Croc here. In the comics, usually they tend to use King Shark. Usually,
that's what I was going to ask. If that's usually where King Shark's located.
Yeah, usually King Shark's in here, but they use him over in the Flash TV series. I do like Croc. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, he was a Jerry Conway creation. If I'm not mistaken,
I believe you're right. You know. But again, my mind goes to the Batman fan of going, all right, we've got Deadshot, we've got Harley Quinn, we've got the Joker, we've got Killer Croc. Like, there's a Batman rogues gallery going on here. So saying that, does that bother you? Like, as a Suicide Squad fan, that we're leaning towards the Bat side
a of little villains? Bit. It's a little Bat-centric on the villains for me. Again, it's Batman. Batman's the only character that Warner Brothers knows what to do with, in my opinion. So that's why we get so many Batman. Again, maybe it's just me and a few other people, but I don't think they know how to handle Superman properly. The Green Lantern they messed up on. I mean, Batman's been the only movie they've done anything decent with over the years, so that may be why. No, I don't mind Croc, and I think the actor, I can't think of his name offhand, I think he did a great job for the most part. There's some dialogue a bit later on that I don't care for, but the actor, I think, did a good job as Croc.
Yeah.
I like her as June Moon. She did a decent job. We didn't get a whole lot of June. But I thought she did a good job while she was given for June Moon.
Yeah, same here.
The Enchantress is a bit of a different story.
That was going to be one of my next questions.
And that's because, she's broke the head of the statue. The Enchantress appears. I back at that company, I used to work for an internet company for 12 years. And at the internet company, my name was Big Perv because I enjoyed looking at the women and just, that's who I was. Still am, but that's another story entirely. So for me to say I don't care for these slutty characters is saying something. I mean, when I met my wife at the internet company I worked for, and when our manager brought her in, it's like, Michelle, this is Aaron. We call him Big Perv. Watch out for a sticky keyboard. I mean, that's who I am. So for me, I don't care for the slutty-fied Enchantress or costume in here. I don't know if the costume look would work. The little, I don't know if you've seen her in the costume. The green witch's hat, the short skirts.
Right. So I get sometimes you look at a costume and go, all right, that's clearly 1970s or, whatever era that is. And go, all right, that probably won't work today. But then your next choice is to go, let's just have her almost completely naked. And that's the other way. I mean, I think there's a middle ground where you can have her in some type of a green cloak or something like that.
I would have preferred they stuck closer to something a little more to the comic. And then we have Rick Flagg. What do you think about what's his name? Joel Kinnan as Rick Flagg.
I liked him.
See, I'm not a big fan of him as Rick Flagg. I don't know. It's just something about him just doesn't come across as Rick Flagg to me. I don't know what it is. He's not horrible, but and every once in a while they cut over to that other guy that's with Amanda Waller, that's Tolliver, he's from the comics.
Okay.
He showed up in the there's Tolliver right there. He was a major jerk, thorn the Suicide Squad side back in the early-ish issues of the original Suicide Squad run. In fact, he was back in the day, they crossed over Firestorm. Time when Firestorm was coming, the blank slate Firestorm.
Oh, okay.
Right before that, there was a crossover where the Suicide Squad was going to go get Firestorm because, spoilers for a 30-year-old comic, Stein was dying. He had cancer or something like that.
Okay, so that's where that is. All right.
And so, he's like, I want to do something in my life before I die. I want Firestorm to mean something. So basically they read Superman 4 and said, you need to get rid of all your nukes or I'm going to do it for you. The world said, no, heck with you. And so the government sent the Suicide Squad to take Firestorm out. And Tolliver was a part of that mission. He released the parasite, which wiped out half their team. And, he went away. But, so I like Tolliver showing up in here. It's a nice nod to those early comics.
I really dug this scene right here where we see Enchantress coming for the first time. I think the Suicide Squad – maybe unfortunately for you, is a property where for the average Joe that's going to the movie theater, and I loved this with the hand flipping over.
I've complained about Enchantress. I agree.
So creepy. Afford to play a little bit with character designs and how they are, because I mean, somebody like my mother, if she would go to see this movie, she would only know from what she's presented on the screen, which – gives a lot of us comic book fans a heart attack and go, no, that's not how that is.
Yes.
So if you make too many changes to a Batman or Superman or Wonder Woman, you have more people go, like, they know Linda Carter, they know Christopher Reeve or Michael Keaton, where you got to kind of stay more in line. But when you start getting in the obscure stuff, you know, for the average Joe, they're not going to really get upset. But I still like to have some of the continuity and the way the characters should operate and even look. I've always said, once they did Iron Man, once Iron Man's running around in bright gold and red, I do not want to see Batman in another black suit again ever.
Yeah, Enchantress is one. Yeah, besides me and maybe five other people don't really care about her. But I still think it would have been, again, a lot of people, well, no one cares. No one knows who the Enchantress is. No one cares what she looks like. Well, then make her look more, a little more like the comic, and that way you can please both the people that don't know her plus the fans of her.
Right, and that exactly. That's kind of my point. Like, if nobody really knows, then why don't you just stick – so let's say I come out of this movie, and I'm like, man, I really want to go read a Suicide Squad comic book, and none of these characters are in the book that's currently on the shelf, and they don't look like how I saw them in the film. I'm going to have a hard time grasping to it. But if you put Enchantress in her – green outfit, even a witch's hat and short skirt or whatever, and she looks that way in the book, I'm more, as a novice, I'm more accepting of it, and that flips around to the comic book fan that can feel validated of going, I've been reading this stuff for 20-30 years and it's finally being represented true.
Well, that's one of my problems, besides just the inherent I don't care for race changes. If you go to pick up a Suicide Squad or a Deadshot comic book at the store, you're not going to see Will Smith.
Right.
You're going to get a white guy. Same thing might play with Aquaman. You go to Aquaman. If you're not a fan of Aquaman, you see Jason Momoa, you go to the comic shop. Jason Momoa is not in the comic. He's a blonde guy.
Right.
And I think they're kind of trying to darken his hair a little bit to make him a little more like that, which I don't like. I don't like when they try to make the comic match a movie. I mean, the comic's been around for 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years. Let's make that match something that's going to be a flash in the pan and be gone, you know, in a couple of years.
Yeah. At least I could go, all right, this looks like Hokkaid 90s Aquaman. Like, all right, I can get where they're getting some inspiration to make that fit into a version of the character.
Right.
But yeah, this whole movie just kind of had me edge of the seats wrong. Like, I was trying to go, so where are we going in this? Like, what's the mission that all these guys are going to be a part of? And why did somebody say we need a Suicide Squad movie as the follow-up to Batman versus Superman?
Right. Hey, as a Suicide Squad, I started my podcast a year or two before the movie came out. So, and I've been a Suicide Squad fan, like I said, since the late 80s. So I'm definitely one that when I heard Suicide Squad, I'm like, yes, but is it too early?
Right.
Do we need to interview some of these villains ahead of time? Do we need – I don't know.
You know,
but
I
understand why they would say they need one now, because, you know, Superman's dead. He's introduced a bigger world to the world. But with Superman dead, and that's like Amanda said, since Superman's dead, they do need a team, because they're – just because Superman's dead doesn't mean all these other menaces are going to go away. My only problem with that concept is, as we learn in Batman versus Superman, Batman's been around for 20 years.
Yeah.
So how many of these villains have been around for that long, and why is it just now becoming a problem?
Yeah, exactly.
We're not here to talk about Batman versus Superman, but that's one of my big issues with that is I don't like the age difference in the two.
Yeah, same
Superman's
here.
Superman's starting out, Batman's been around for 20 years. To me, they both should be around the same time frame.
Right. I guess it's interesting how they're keeping El Diablo in here in this little, like, containment type thing, so he can't fry everyone.
You know, I wasn't as familiar with Diablo before the movie, but I do like this character.
Yeah. I did like this scene with
Deadshot.
Deadshot and the guns, where he's like, y'all are crazy. Like, you're going to give me the accessibility to guns right here.
The hell I am.
Yeah.
What, the cheerleading tryouts?
is this the, I'm blanking on his name, Chicago Bears coach.
Ditka?
Ditka. Or... He's like, is this the first reference to Ditka? He's like, triangle, bitch.
I think so. Yeah. Like that was good brown history.
Yeah, like keep talking. Let's see you hang yourself here.
I love Waller.
Yeah, like Waller's just right behind him. Oh, and you don't know what I know yet.
He's like, oh crap! But
yeah,
that was a live round. What the hell?
Crazy.
The was crazy. I like that line. It was a little too much Will Smith for me.
Yeah, that was where Will Smith came out. Like, this is an outtake of Bad Boys 3.
Yeah. Coming up. Unless I'm a big Will Smith fan, but I don't want Will Smith as Deadshot. That's right. One of my big complaints.
I think in any movie, I think fans want, I'm not saying I want Tom Hanks in a movie, but you can, I'm just using it as an example.
Right.
You go watch a Tom Hanks movie, you're not watching Tom Hanks. He's portraying that character and that facade goes away. You put George Clooney in a Batman mask, you go, hey, look, it's George Clooney wearing a Batman mask.
Yeah.
I think Will Smith in a lot of things, you're getting Will Smith. Hey, we got Will Smith in this movie. You're not getting Floyd Lawton. You're getting Will Smith dressing up as Deadshot.
Yes, exactly.
But at the same time, I was like, all right, I can roll with it. Like there were enough little nuggets that he could kind of deliver.
Yeah. Yeah, at times he's Deadshot, and at times he's Will Smith.
Yeah.
I like the scene here, making his demands.
Yeah.
It's a white people, that thing. And again, that's my, a lot of people, well, it doesn't matter what the race is, it's not part of the character. But things, anything like that that brings the race into the question. Once you meet somebody's daughter, you know, she starts telling you to white people that shit. Well, that... You're bringing race into it at that point.
Right. You have to. It's not bad enough that you're a murderer and happen to be a white guy that because, and again, I'm not trying to say to offend anyone, but you're having to write the ethnicity into the character that's not inherently part of the character's motive that, you know, could have simply just said, I want you to take care of my daughter. I want her to have all the best that I never got. You'd go, okay, I get it. But trying to...
They're going for a joke, but...
Yeah.
I think it was at the expense of the character.
Right, exactly. I never like when that's done, where you're taking a focal point character and you're turning them into the joke of the character if that's not part of who and what they are.
Right.
Let's take the joke at the character's expense. Harley Quinn, yeah, I would get that. Somebody like...
But Floyd's more of a serious character. He's not... I don't see Floyd making these jokes.
No, I could see him doing something like shooting somebody in a funny way and being like, ha-ha, I get that, but that character's not your comedy relief.
Right.
And this I don't get... Again, I think it's a stoned Joker. Now he's drawn a black smile around his, like, I'm like, what is going on with this character?
And again, I think that maybe you're trying to make another nod towards the rictus grin, but too little too late, in my opinion. And I don't understand this whole scene. It's just kind of, I don't like his laugh. It annoys the hell out of me. You got the baby clothes in the background over there. I just don't know. That scene, I think they could have done without that scene.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people complain that there wasn't enough Joker in here. I think there was too much Joker. Joker wasn't a big part of the Suicide Squad back in the day. he only really showed up once Barbara Gordon became a part of the team, again, spoilers, as Oracle.
Yeah, I forgot that she was part of that.
Yeah, she joined up with the Suicide Squad, helping them out, and so a bit later on, he kind of showed up a little bit just because she was in the team, but...
Right.
He wasn't a huge member of the... or a part of the squad.
You know, and hearing from the director that, you know, spoilers if you haven't seen the movie, of who the big bad is, that he almost regrets not having just the Joker be the main villain of the film.
See, you know, and we're going to get to that when we get to the plot of the movie, the villain of the movie, but I do agree they needed to have a different villain. I wouldn't have liked it to be the Joker, or at least this Joker.
Right.
And again, my problem with the Joker being a main villain in the movie is he's the Joker.
Right.
He fights Batman. I don't know. I've got a buddy that I used to work with at the IRS that is a big Joker fan. And we had this conversation before the movie came out that I'm afraid he's going to be in here too much. From what he was in the trailers, he seemed to be quite a bit. And I'm like, yeah, as a Suicide Squad fan, I think people are going to be disappointed if he's in there too much. But if he's not in there enough as a Joker fan, people may, you know, take it on the movie if he's not in there enough. I don't know. And then we get to Enchantress again.
Yeah.
Not a bad scene. I think it would have been better if she had looked more like the Enchantress. Vision of some sort of June.
You know, it's funny that in real life she's tatted up decently, but June had to cover up all of her her natural tattoos, which the one character that they're not showing her tattoos, the one that has probably the most in real life.
And I can see them covering up because, yeah, June Moon's an archaeologist. She's supposed to be
right.
She's not someone you would think of being tatted up. So I appreciate that. And I like here that Amanda Waller's got her heart under lock and key. And this is, I'm not going to say straight out of the comics, but this is from a storyline from the comics where the Enchantress's brother, his name was Incubus, showed up and they had to deal with him. He would possess people.
If I remember. This was a trippy scene.
Yeah. And this is where we start to get into we haven't got to the plot of the movie yet, the main villain, but spoilers for what's going to happen here in a little bit. Incubus and Enchantress become the main villains of the movie. I don't mind that because, again, it's kind of from the comic. I think having them be the villains in the first movie was wrong.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think having the villain be part of your team, well, that's great, but let's get to know the characters first. I think it would have been better had they fought somebody else in this movie, and then if they got a second movie, then do this storyline. That way, this movie, you could introduce June and Enchantress, and you could get people to care for the characters.
Yeah, you could have hinted at that maybe she's looking for the idol of the doll that has her brother's soul in it. And that, you know, that you're just kind of hinting at those little things, like you said, rather than, you know, she's not even really a part of the team going out on this mission. She becomes the one that they're going after.
Right. Yeah, I think it would have been better. Again, I'm not a writer, so no one cares what I think, but I do think it would have been better. Yeah, have her part of the team, have people, you know, have us, the audience, care for June and the Enchantress, as it were, in this movie. And then that way, when she does turn out to be the big bad villain, there's a bit of a heart wrench there.
I don't remember if – I'm sure you did talk about this, but I remember just – about said message boards, that was how old I am with the internet, but seeing things on Facebook and YouTube videos of everybody trying to figure out this little sequence in here when you're starting to see, you know, the train going by, like, what's in there? What is that? People's thinking that it was the Joker that was possessed. They were looking at the green light coming in through the train coming through here. And then seeing the actual movie going, wow, people were really way off of what was going on. Like every possible fan theory that you could have had back then.
And yes, I didn't make any predictions on the trailer what it could be. I'm like, I'm the type that, well, I'm not going to guess because a lot of people, I've seen a lot of people, they'll guess about a movie and then when that's wrong, that makes them dislike the movie. Well, that's not what I expect. I don't like this. So I prefer to try to keep a little more open mind. And I'm like, well, what's going to happen? You know, what is going to happen in this? And then when I see it's involving Incubus, this Chantress's brother, I'm like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And here's Shirley calling for the Task Force X.
What did you think of Margot's Harley Quinn voice?
I was just going to comment. I had a lot of people tell me they complained about the accent, it come and goes. I'm horrible at accents, so I didn't really notice a big difference in it. I thought, sure, I'm used to the animated Harley Quinn.
Arlene Sorkin and then yes. Tara Strong in the latter.
I'm more used to their accent, their voice, but I didn't mind what she did here. I say, other than the costume, I didn't have a problem with Harley Quinn. Well, other than the fact that she plays such an important part in the movie.
Right.
What is that? Starts laughing. What is that?
Doing the implants.
I love that. That's very much from the comic. It used to be a gauntlet they would just drop under their wrist. He's a Depo. And again, see, again, it brings out the blackness in him. Depo. That wouldn't be Floyd. You know, I'm not nitpicking that, but.
Sorry, just hearing Harley go, wee!
Bart slips with the phone from Joker.
Yeah.
Division Wayne Corp.
And I feel like all of the Joker's sequences probably save one. We saw. So when this van rolled up, I'm like, oh, okay, this is where he's wearing the purple coat and they're coming through. Here's the guy with the Batman mask. You know, here's the panda.
So he spoke for a video. Oh, 1 minute. Okay, never mind. Okay, let you in.
Yeah. I actually like this jacket on him. I think he probably needed a shirt, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't mind the jackets. But yeah, I do agree. Yeah, he should have had a shirt on. That's... The Joker doesn't normally walk around shirtless like that. Yeah, so when I was complaining online about the tattoos and all this about Joker, like, well, Joker's got tattoos. Show me one place. And they posted a picture from the All-Star Batman comic by Frank Miller. But yeah, you use the worst possible interpretation. That's the same one that had, you know, I'm the DG Batman with Batman locking Robin in the cave with rats or whatever.
Right.
It's not a great place to pull from.
Yeah, and I saw some people doing the Batman RIP version of the Joker, putting those images up where he's like licking the knife and forking his own tongue, and he's shirtless in that as well.
I got the Dwellers like that. That's it. You done messing, you know, like, take your heart out.
Yeah. I mean, this becomes a main set piece. Again, spoilers for the final act of the film, and our villains don't leave. anywhere. So the only other villain or person that we're going to chase around is the Joker.
Right.
A friend of mine says this is the Zool stage, you know.
Well, yeah, he's also compared to the Avengers movie.
Right.
Giant hole in the sky.
Yep. Hole in the sky with the debris.
Yeah. And part of the problem I had with the Man of Steel movie, I get tired of, and maybe it's just I've seen too many movies, I get tired of all the senseless destruction.
Yeah,
I mean, entire cities. I don't know.
I think a lot of that goes back to like the Independence Day, where you know, we get to see the White House blow up, and we're seeing, you know, all the monuments and things, and look at all this destruction. And I feel like it's not a movie unless we blow up something. And even if the bad guys are bad, you know, we still have to have their car explode, you know, because they're bad guys.
Right.
And they've got to crash into 50 million things, and we've got to show destruction. Eastwood here, a lot of people were like, ooh, maybe this is Dick Grayson.
Yeah, so
he's undercover.
Yeah, I heard everyone guessing when they announced Eastwood was going to be in here. Heard everyone guess, well, he's going to be Robin. He's going to be Dick Grayson. He's going to be, you know, this or that. And a lot of people were upset that he wasn't.
Yeah.
Hey, Gwen, how you doing? I like this scene here for the most part. What was that?
That's not... The voices.
I love that. That's a great scene.
That's not what they really said.
I love that
scene. You know, for little pieces that were you kind of go, oh, I wish they wouldn't do that, that they can pull out little moments like that to get me chuckling or going, all right, I like it.
I don't care for this. That's not Boomerang.
Right.
Captain Boomerang is not going to be hauled in a bag and jump out and start fighting people.
I thought it was funny in the context of the film, but it's not, like you said, it's not, again, it's not part of his character.
If it was a different character, I could get behind. Because, yeah, it was a great scene. It's just, yeah, it's not Boomerang. Slipknot. made famous by the Fire and Water podcast. Oh.
Yeah. You die.
You can't vex me.
Another funny movie from the trailer, or line rather.
And a lot of people, I said earlier, a lot of people complain about her accents. I don't mind the changing accent because it kind of reinforces the theory that she's batshit crazy.
Oh yeah, she's slipping in and out of different personalities that she has. I mean, she's already talking about the voices that she hears. So yeah, it didn't. Here's the Phil Jackson.
Again, Floyd call him a bitch. I don't see. I love that. Pulls out the Harley Quinn costume. And yeah, I've got a love for Slipknot because, again, another Jerry Conway Firestorm character that was also a member of the Suicide Squad for a short time.
Right.
In the comics, so.
Puddin' necklace.
Yeah.
And there's the...
There's the unicorn. Yeah, see, he's never had a unicorn. Again, I blame the Deadpool movie for that. She's looking around. What? And again, like I said, I prefer to have her in this Harley Quinn costume. That's what I prefer. Harley Quinn can't pull those shorts off.
So what do you think of this, like we were talking about, that the comics are trying to catch up with the movie? They've kind of not reverted, but they now the comics are going, all right, well, this is how people know Harley Quinn. We've got a movie coming out before too long with Harley Quinn in it again, that we've seen her in the short shorts or the roller skating wheels. That's right. More akin to the Margot Robbie version than how she was before the New 52 started.
As far as the New 52, my mom told me, if you can't say something nice, don't say nothing at all.
Right.
Yeah, again, I prefer the Harley Quinn costume. It's, I don't know. I like the fact that this takes place in Midway City. That's from the comics.
Yeah.
It was Hawkman's hometown, if I'm not mistaken.
I see everything.
Good here. She killed him.
Yeah.
I like the name drop there. What are we? Suicide Squad? Had to be said.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on Katana?
I've always been a fan of the character. And I was surprised that they were adding her into the movie, and I didn't know in what capacity. Like, is she going to be a part of the team because she's supposed to be a good guy, and I know she's got a troubled past or whatever.
Right.
But I dug her. Karen, I can't think of her real name, her last name. I thought she did a really good job with what she was presented here. And at first, seeing – like the very first publicity shot of the Suicide Squad, I did not care for this look at all. I was, because the Arrow version had just happened not that long ago. Mm. And I thought, man, she looks like she came right out of the screen. And this, I thought, looked like a bad cosplay. But after the movie, I dig this outfit, and I liked her performance.
I'm not a huge fan of Katana from the comics to begin with. So she was all right. I personally... And again, I know one reason they put Will Smith is Deadshot, because they wanted to have a little more, some more black people in the movie. I would have preferred if they would have used Bronze Tiger as Rick Flag's backup. Because again, we get another, you know, a black character, we get another, you know, hero with a checkered past. And Bronze Tiger, again, is one that's, I think, would have worked. I mean, he's shown up in the Arrowverse, but I think he would have worked well in this movie. And personally, I would have liked him better than Katana. Because again, I'm not a fan of Katana to begin with.
I can understand that.
She's one of my least favorites out of the Outsiders.
Right.
You're a bad liar.
Like, it's also one of those that's throwing another female character into the mix. It's not just Harley. You do have Katana that's...
Yeah. You're so good at these credit cards. It's true.
The music choice in this, I think, is really strong.
Yeah, I do like the music in this. Just like Suicide Squad missions, it goes FUBAR from the beginning. There are people complaining, how could the Suicide Squad walk away from the plane the helicopter crashing? It's a comic book movie. There's some things you've got to give it.
Yeah, there has to be a decent amount of suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
With this.
commander. They're just like, oh, God.
Yeah.
This fool's doing.
Just sent this team of nut jobs in, and they get killed within 2 seconds of the mission.
I like the scene here.
Yeah, so do I. As a way to test of, like, they're not really going to kill us. I bet if you get out of here, you can see.
That's, again, not directly from the comic, but it's from the comic. During the Millennium crossover, they were in the swamps, if I'm not mistaken, and Boomerang was talking to Slipknot, and, you know, Slipknot was wondering if the Bracers were going to blow their wrist off, and Boomerang's basically telling the same thing. Oh, they're not going to kill. They're not going to blow your wrist off. They're not going to do that. And basically, yeah, he's testing out the theory himself. He doesn't know. So he talks Slipknot into doing it. And I'll just worry, he's not going very far.
Yeah. And done.
Bye. Yeah, he didn't wind up dead in the comic. He did have his wrist blown off. But wait, oh, shit, they're serious.
That's a killer app. Croc checking his, everybody's checking their necks now.
Oh, crap, they're serious. But I did love that scene because, again, yeah, it was from the comic with the basics of Boomerang talking Slipknot into escaping just so he could test it out and make sure if it's going to work or not. But I tell him, no, they're not going to do that. I know they're full of BS. You know, it's all a crock. And then Slipknot suffers and Captain Boomerang, oh, I guess they're serious. So I the fact that they killed off Slipknot, I did enjoy that. I did enjoy that scene.
I'm trying to remember if Will and Margot's Robbie or Will and Margot's movie was before Suicide Squad or after Suicide Squad.
I think it was before. I haven't seen it, but I think it was before Suicide Squad.
Wasn't too bad. Kind of building little alliances back and forth with one another in case things go sideways.
Very much a Harley Quinn thing. But yeah, that movie, if I'm not mistaken, did come out before this one did.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I was a little apprehensive with Jai Courtney coming into this, knowing the typical character he usually plays in some of his movies. I thought he actually, again, it may not necessarily be what Captain Boomerang is supposed to be, but I thought he was a lot better than I thought he was going to be in this role.
Again, maybe another character, yeah, I would agree. But I'm just thrown off by that this is the complete opposite of Captain Boomerang.
Yeah.
I mean, there is moments, I say, when he talked Slipknot and taking off, things like that is Captain Boomerang. But, yeah, the whole – to me, like I said before, he comes across as a soccer hooligan.
Mm.
And that's very much not Captain Boomerang. Boomerang, especially in the Suicide Squad, is a bit more of a coward. I want to call him a coward, doing things behind the scenes.
Thinking of numero uno.
Yes, trying to get off when he can, and, you know. The storyline in the comic where he was imposing a mirror master so he could get away with doing crimes while still being part of the Suicide Squad and Belrev's whole thing. Yeah, I'm still loving Viola Davis as Waller. She's doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
I do like, even though they don't wear the mask, they do have, he does have the eyepiece.
Which, from playing the Arkham games, you know, that was kind of a look for Floyd Lawton, of just having the eyepiece on and having his goatee or, you know, 5 o'clock shot or whatever it was. So it was kind of a look that I was like, all right, I've kind of seen this version of Deadshot, but I also like the characters are supposed to have masks and a cape or whatever it is. Kind of like Katana. I'm glad they went with a mask with her. That's right. Her look.
Yeah, I do like the fact they have her sword, her soul sword.
Yeah.
And this is kind of Captain Boomerang kind of sneaking off. About drinking like that, but sneaking off. That is a very Captain Boomerang thing to do. Slicing and dicing. There are a lot of people complain about the cannon fodder in here. These creatures, people complain about that. I didn't mind them.
No, I didn't either.
They can kill creatures without actually killing people. So I understand what they were going for.
Yeah, that was something I thought about going into this movie of... You know, who's the Suicide Squad going to go after to kill? You know, they're going to have to shoot somebody. Or, you know, you're not going to have a whole movie of them not firing a single shot. So when this scene started, I was like, oh, okay. We can kind of see how they fight with one another.
Here's this. I let him take flag, or
is this our way out, or what? You know.
Like, damn it! You got a point.
The only reason we're saving you, sorry, bud.
Yeah. Deadshot doing what he does best, mowing people down.
I did like this sequence.
Yeah.
Here with him.
Yeah, different guns. And...
Everybody's stopping to see that one guy is taking the ball down. Every time we got a shot of the sky in this, I was like, just let us see a wing of Hawkman fly somewhere.
Yeah.
I wanted to see Carter Hall somewhere, you know?
Yeah. If they're in Midway, she's just smashing that one.
Like, stop. I saw it move.
I did like that lighter scene of Boomerang. That is, again, very Boomerang thing. And I keep saying, you know, this is a Boomerang or this is not a Boomerang thing to do. And just being a fan of the comics for so long, it's hard not to compare it to the source material.
Oh, yeah. Totally. I totally get that. So then you start looking at it and going, you're dressing the character up right. as the individual, but they're not acting right. like the individual.
Yeah, I do agree with you that I wish Hawkman would have somewhere, I don't know. But then the question comes up, why didn't he help out more? So,
right.
So I can understand why they wouldn't want to do that without including him in the movie. Which wouldn't have been a bad thing, but.
Right.
Get a chance to do her swaying here in the background. We're bad guys.
That's what we do.
Seriously, what's wrong with you people? Perspective death shot.
Yeah. I like the chemistry that Floyd is having with Flag right here. They're kind of starting to build some type of a rapport.
Yeah. Yeah, I do like that. It was a very nice, a very touching scene there, if you will, showing them bonding a little bit or trying to bond.
Not telling them who they're going after yet.
Maybe more flashback for Harley, more of her backstory, her origin.
And if I remember right, this was not in the theatrical cut.
Okay. Yes, in the Ben Wallace I've watched. I forget which one was in there, which was. Yeah, you're.
Yeah, because I think theatrically we go right to Ace Chemicals.
I think you're right.
Which, like you said, you know, this is in the theatrical cut, even just looking at it in the extended cut here, that it's starting to become more of a Harley Quinn Joker film, even though it's got a Suicide Squad banner at the top and it's two characters that aren't traditionally associated
right
with the property. And I think a reason this was cut from the theatrical cut, you've got Harley Quinzel killing somebody in cold blood to, you know, impress the Joker. It's like, we don't show it. You can imply that, yeah, she's probably done some bad things, but we don't necessarily know. You don't have to see it on screen.
And I understand, yeah, she fell in love with him. He, you know, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if I like Harley before she becomes Harley Quinn killing someone like that.
Right. I think, for me, she wouldn't go into killing until she becomes Harley Quinn, not
until she takes the dunk and
right.
I can't come out that shot there with her walking away, but
sorry, I forgot what we were talking about for a second.
But yeah, I think
like also there. Theatrically they covered that up. They made her shorts longer.
Yeah. Is this part of the extended scene?
I think this is also
extended. Yeah, I don't recall this conversation between the two of them.
I think there are parts of this, but the Killer Croc Harley scene was cut. Because I haven't... This is the version I watch... They do put this in. I do watch the extended cut. I'm like, this is what the director wanted us to see.
Right.
Same with Batman versus Superman. I don't watch the theatrical cut. I watch the extended cut. See, she almost, I like the scene a little bit. She's taking off the mask. She almost looks dead inside. She's not hiding behind her mask. She's more, that's just who she is now. Lost her husband and all of that. She's living this life. Doing what she has to do to survive or atone.
Right. And I do like, I don't know if I care for this entire scene, but I do like the fact that Harley Quinn's using her profession here.
Yeah.
She's using her psychiatry to you know, see what makes each of these people tick.
And what can she use to her advantage, too?
I love that. The John Ostrander building.
Yes.
John Ostrander, for those that don't know, was the, well, for those on the show, you probably do know, but. He's the one that wrote the Suicide Squad in the 80s, the original Suicide Squad. So that was a nice touch, naming the building after him. Yeah, when me and the wife went and watched the movie, I was sitting there giggling. She's like, okay, what's so funny about that? So I had to tell her that that's the name of the writer that wrote the book. Nice touch. Yeah, Tom, me and the wife goes to watch these movies. She's watching me to see my reaction to a lot of these scenes.
That's how my wife does when I laugh and giggle or something or go, ah, you know, it's okay. What is that? What's the connection?
Yeah, my wife is like, okay, what is it?
Yeah. In case you forgot, honey, your husband is a nerd. Let me explain why.
Yeah. Bye. They're trying to sneak in. She just rides up an elevator. Like, hell with it.
I'm watching this with the subtitles on, and every time music comes up, when the Eminem song was playing, it said rap music. Now it says pop music playing.
I think Pop and Johnny, she just kills him and fixes her hair.
Yeah. Okay, back to primping. The other tattoos that Harley has, I don't mind as much, but the rotten tattoo on the side of her face, I think is just about as bad on the nose as the damaged tattoo on the Joker's hat. I love that move, flipping over the elevator. That was cool, but.
Yeah, it was nice. Hey, guys. Yeah, I do like that elevator scene. Not as good as the one in the one Captain America movie, but
right. If anybody wants to get off now,
do so.
Is it better than the Batman Forever elevator scene?
Batman Forever.
A bunch of bullets through the elevator. The door opens up. Batman's not there. They look in. He comes down from the top.
Oh, yeah. That was good. That was a good one, too. I still like Captain America one better.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I kind of like this sequence, too, in close quarters in an office.
Yeah. And then he finally gets Floyd with his mask on.
Which, this is one of those parts where, okay, you got a character that's taking the mask off and on. I get it. When he's out doing a contract, he doesn't want to be noticed. But now he's putting the mask on. I don't think it matters at this point whether he has it. I mean, for the character, I'm glad to see it, but
why now?
Yeah, why now when you weren't?
And he said earlier, when I set the mask on, people die. Well, you've been killing people, but you haven't had to have it on, so.
Yeah.
If you die, you die, we die.
Ostrander is going to have such a hard time cleaning this building up when they're done.
I'm telling you. Yeah.
Captain Boomerang just crawling away.
See something? I want to see something. Now Diablo doing what he does. Like, wow. Again, we were talking about Harley Quinn. I think her daddy's little monster shirt again, a little too much spot on the nose.
Yeah. Although it was the Halloween outfit of choice that year for...
Yeah. Well, my daughter at the time was, what, third grade? I believe it was. And, yeah, I went to her Halloween. It's from school to my kindergarten to fifth grade. And there's girls with the Harley Quinn costume on. Like, seriously?
Like, that version of Harley Quinn is getting a costume.
Yeah, like, seriously, don't you think your daughter's a little young? Again, I'm not going to play about a comic book costume, don't get me wrong, but...
Right.
Seriously, you're going to put your 8-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old daughter in this costume?
Wearing hot pants. Like, all right.
Yeah. Again, maybe I'm just getting old. The flashback, again, we do want to get an origin of Harley Quinn, I guess, but yeah, like you said, it's turning into Harley Quinn and the Suicide Squad.
Right.
That's what I was afraid of.
You know, there's a Birds of Prey movie coming out that I think is going to be a Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey movie.
Yeah.
You know, instead of a Birds of Prey movie. That's a discussion for another time.
Yes. I'm sure we'll talk about it at some point. Some will talk about it. But. I hate that tattoo in the hand. It just bugs the crap out of me. Yeah, I'm kind of glad they dropped that earlier Harley Quinn sequence from the movie. So it's not quite as Harley and Joker heavy.
Yeah. It's really kind of bookended this sequence. Before you get into the office, you have their meeting outside.
Right.
And have the office fight, and now we're back here. This part with the Joker is like, all right, she just jumped, committed suicide. I'm out.
I do like it. It's Ace Chemicals.
Yeah.
Ties into the Joker.
But this is a beat that I don't mind so much of, like, the Joker knowing, all right, I'm tied to her. I do like her.
Do you like that? I was wondering about that. Because a lot of people, again, my friend at work, he's a big Joker fan. You know, he talked about the Joker-Harley romance. And they don't have a romance. She's in an abusive relationship.
Right.
Normally in the comics, he uses her. I don't get a romance with the Joker. Yes, from Harlequin, but not from the Joker. I don't know if I would see the Joker jumping in the pit of the saber like that.
Right. I think I agree with that too. I mean, I like it would have almost been the other way if he would have jumped back in and says, I can't do this and wants to see if she's blindly going to follow him to know, okay, now I've gained complete control of her, as opposed to the reverse where, darn it, I love you. Like your friend's right. She's in the abusive relationship. And if Harley Quinn dies tomorrow, the Joker's going to be like, oh, well, that was fun.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that's why I was telling him it's an abuse. It's not a loving relationship. It's an abusive relationship. And I've seen memes out there, you know, I want a relationship like the Joker and Harley. You want an abusive relationship?
No, you don't.
You need to see a psychiatrist. Oops.
Yeah, you need to seek a psychiatrist if you want that kind of relationship, because that's not healthy.
No.
Steve Burke here, cancer and after all this shit.
And this is the, oh no, the heck we didn't just do this mission for this reason.
Yeah. And this is where part of my problem with the movie comes in to the way they treat Waller here, which we'll see in just a minute here. I'll give it till she actually does it before I can complain about it.
And it's when that scene comes up, I think that's where the movie goes sideways just a little bit.
We get Deadshot coming in, seeing all this. Oh, hell no. Right here.
Yeah.
Mandarar starts killing our support staff. And I know John Ostender commented on Facebook somewhere about that, you know, that's not what I would have done, but, you know, it's I'm fine with it. I'm like, really? It's not my character, but I've got – that's where – because a lot of people say, well, Mandarar is a villain. Well, she's not really a villain. She does a dirty job that needs to be done. She gets her feet dirty, her hands dirty, and she does a dirty job, but she does it – the best way she can.
Yeah, I think she would have been the last one in there, like, get out of here, get the data out.
Yeah, let's race the data. Let's get you guys out of here. She would have killed her entire support staff just because, well, they're in the way. I don't leave
right, exactly. It's your support staff. You are going to need them later, not have to hire a bunch of new knuckleheads to bring them up to speed.
Yeah.
Because I think they're almost trying to put her on the same level as the Suicide Squad. Now, look, I'm just as bad as you guys.
Yeah.
Like you said, she's doing bad things, but she's not – she's still a step above them. Like, I'm not murdering people. Some people may die on my watch, but it's for the greater good. You're just killing people to kill people.
Yeah, she doesn't mind blowing their bombs if she has to.
Right.
But, yeah, she's not – her support staff are completely innocent people. There are people that were working for her, working for the government, whatever. And yeah, that's one of the big things that really turned me off on this movie. It's every time I see that, when she's just blowing her people away, I'm like, no, don't. And again, here, if she would have brought her support staff with her, that would have gave her more of a reason to leave the squad behind at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like a decent sized helicopter. Oh, that's not the right one. It's the other one. This one that's been kidnapped. Where the Joker tries to free Harley Quinn. And here's another, which I'll talk about in a minute. Another problem I have with this movie. And part of it's because of, I think, Will Smith playing in it. The Joker's been attacking him.
No, I don't mind that laugh there.
Yeah, that one was fine. That's what, I got a hickey or something? Yeah, no, that laugh was fine. Most of the others' laughs annoy the hell out of me. That one there, I didn't mind.
Yeah.
Surprise, your bomb's disarmed. I'm out of here.
I'm out. And you know, this is the extended cut, and there's still more Joker footage on the table.
Yeah. That's a lot. Whenever I complain about the Joker, like, well, you didn't see enough of him. Like, I don't need to see, you know, I don't need to stare at a pile of crap for 10 minutes and it was crap.
Right, yeah.
I didn't need to see more of the Joker and I don't like him. And it goes from the costume design to the actor himself, the dialogue. Here's my other part I didn't care for. So I like the part here. You know, kill me, give your kid. Swipe her up, she's gone.
Right.
But I think they're trying to humanize Deadshot too much.
Trying to find some redeemable character in all of them. When I'm right. they're villains. They're bad guys.
Yeah, Deadshot, his in the comics, he's got a death wish. The way they keep him alive is his, you know, thinking of his daughter. He wouldn't have missed that on purpose. And that's the way it comes across here. Boomerang would have said good job. Boomerang would have been, what are you doing, you idiot? You could have got free.
Right, yeah. That was your ticket out.
Like, yeah.
Let me take a shot at it.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole scene, I just didn't care for the way it played out. Yeah, they're like you're saying, they're trying to give them each a redeeming quality, trying to – and I don't know. And again, I was blaming on the fact that it's Will Smith and he wants to be a good person.
Right.
But I think maybe it's just the way the writers wrote it that they want to give them all a redeeming quality. Because, yeah, Boomerang, yeah, again, was out of character there. Boomerang wouldn't have cared about Holly Carly surviving.
No. You know, if I knock her off, I get – another 10 years knocked off my sentence? Heck yeah, I'll shoot her twice, you know?
Like you said, yeah, Boomerang would have stepped up. Let me take a shot at her now.
Yeah.
And because it's comics, I'll give her for surviving that fall.
Yeah.
Because that looked like it was quite a drop, but again, it's a comic book movie, so I'll give him that. Joker, again, in quotes, dying in the plane helicopter crash. It's a very Joker thing. To seemingly die in a crash of some sort.
Right. There's no way he could have survived, but it's the Joker. Found a way, you know?
Again, that's not Boomerang. He couldn't have saved her.
He'd have been the type that would have been like, good, we didn't need it.
Yeah.
More for the rest of us, so, you know, whatever.
And why not take other people with them instead of just Amanda? I don't know, it's going to crash her in a minute, but I don't know, I'm still bothered by her killing all our people in that one scene. That still bugs me.
Yeah. If you're part of the Suicide Squad and you get in any type of an air vehicle, you will crash. You will land on the street and it will be hard. Do you sign up for this? Sure, why not?
Hey, yeah, if you want to kill them off, yeah, pimps, you know, have men not kill them on the helicopter and they die here. But, yeah, I'm just bothered by that whole Amanda Waller killing them all.
Yeah. On my screen, it said, creature speaking in another language.
Okay.
All right. Was it Russian?
What language? Yeah.
And Now, behind me on a shelf that I have, a big action figure collector, I do have all of the Mattel Multiverse members of the Suicide Squad and actually all of the DCEU figures. So just kind of buying them all to collect and connect Killer Croc. So I was eventually able to finish that and go, here I am with a Katana figure and a Deadshot figure and a Harley Quinn figure, all from a movie.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, who'd have thought, you know? It's one thing to pick up, you know, just comic book accurate versions of the character and then to have them all be in a movie.
I guess in their Harley where she's all sad and depressed because Joker died. And as soon as the guys walk out, she's like, hi, I'm back.
Yeah, trying to hide it.
Yeah.
I remember that this picture was going around for quite a while of him picking her off the car. Right. It was one of the, you know, behind the scenes stills trying to figure out, you know, what was going on there. Are they falling in love? Are they having a romance?
Yeah, I still say they should have got John Austin to write this movie.
Yeah.
It would have been much better.
Or at least write a treatment for it.
Something, yeah.
And that would have been, as a consultant too, like,
yeah,
the motivations for the characters, would they be doing this, that, or the other?
So question, if Amanda Waller stabbed the hell out of her and destroyed her heart earlier, how's her heart hold now?
I know.
Unless it's just it healed whenever he did his Mojo Jojo on her to keep her from dying earlier.
True.
Another little nitpick. Yeah, I think earlier we were talking, they kind of show a bit of Amanda's backstory in here about she lost her husband, so lost some of her kids. That's all straight from the John Ostrander comic. We were talking about Harley or Joker at that point, but
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to mention that. Yeah, that was her losing her husband and some of her kids, working her way up. That was all from the comic.
You know, we're starting to get close to the, like, bar scene coming up here before too long. A little more backstory with the Enchantress.
Yep. This was part of the scene earlier where she stabbed the hell out of the heart. So, as someone that didn't read these comics, did you understand what was going on with Enchantress and her brother? Did you realize that?
No, I didn't. I didn't realize that was kind of what the two of them were doing until kind of after the fact. So, while the movie was going on, this I was really kind of lost.
That's what I was wondering, because yeah, like I said, I read these comics, so I knew when they introduced him that it was Inky, that's her brother, and da-da-da. But I was just curious, someone that hadn't read the books, what they thought about that.
No, I was fine with the relationship and how they, I guess, were being used with one another, but I was trying to figure out the hows and the whys.
Right.
So this sequence now that they're in the bar and they're going to start having their drinks and, you know, start telling stories and stuff. This is another, like you were talking earlier about them trying to humanize the characters and find moments of redemption, that we've got to put the band back together. We've got to go out on this mission and try and be better than what we were. And it's kind of at the end of the day, if this was a Flash movie, the Flash is going to come right in here, punch Captain Boomerang right in the face, haul him off the jail, and I'm going to be like, yeah, Captain Boomerang got hit in the face. But here now it's like we've got to try and be on some type of level as good as the heroes that we fight against. I mean, I understand what they're trying to do, but it's trying to make me empathize with the villain of the character.
Right. And some are, and again, to be comic accurate, don't have a lot of redeeming factors. Boomerang's one of those. Deadshot can to a point. But yeah, he's the merciless killer. You know, he can't kill Batman because Batman reminds him of his brother. There's that whole backstory there.
I don't mind the look of Killer Croc. Hearing you say King Shark, I think King Shark probably would have worked better here. I don't look at Killer Croc as somebody that's on the team that's going to have the flip of morality on some level. Killer Croc's going to eat you alive, you know?
Yeah, out of this team, I think Del Diablo is the best one to have the not necessarily change of heart, but the to bring the good out of him, if you will.
Right.
And that's partly because I'm not as familiar with that character. The rest of them I'm familiar with, like, say, Deadshot, Boomerang, was their starring members of the Suicide Squad. They were there from the beginning. Croc, I'm just familiar with from Batman comics. Harley Quinn, again, from the Batman, then in the new 52 and beyond, she's a part of the Suicide Squad. In fact, this whole group is because of the movie.
Right. Kitana had gone from an outsider to working by herself to be part of Justice League of America. So kind of like Cyborg, they, you know, upped her as an important type of a character. So,
and she did work with the squad for a while also, so
yeah,
I didn't mind seeing her here. Myself, I was not a fan of the character, I didn't mind seeing her there.
Yeah.
So yeah, now we're getting Del Diablo's backstory. So we get a backstory from El Diablo, some from Deadshot, and Harley Quinn's backstory. We don't get much for Captain Boomerang or Croc. Like a little fire woman in his hand.
Yeah.
Figure. That was nice.
An almost Mr. Freeze-esque, you know,
the whole
Nora thing, the little, you know, ballerina dancer that he carries around his little globe. A nice little symbolism there too, you know, this beautiful fire ballerina that's dancing around their dancer, and then he puts the glass over it, taking out the oxygen, basically saying that he killed his family, you know. They're no more. He's got nothing to live for. Which Harley's kind of underlining kind of what I was saying, like, you know, pull yourself out of it. Like, look who we are.
Right.
You know, we don't get to have the normal life. We're not that.
Well, I do like that little speech she just gave you. Oh, you know, we don't get the family life. We don't get the dryer. We don't get, you know, when later on we'll talk about. Yeah. Except for him. He's a shitty outside too. But later on, she'll fan, you know, when they meet the Enchantress, her vision will be of a home, happy home life. So I do like the parallel there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got sidetracked that whole, except for him and dialogue.
You've been with a witch before. What's that like? Now, in the comic, does Rick Flagg and June and Enchantress, are they a thing?
I'm trying to remember. I know originally he had a thing with a kid down in Karen Gray's that kind of blew up on him. So Nightshade had a thing with Captain Adam. Yeah, I think he did have a short. I'm trying to remember. It's been a while. But I believe they did have a short. It wasn't like this so much. But yeah, they did have a short little romance, if I'm not mistaken, in the comic. It just didn't come to blow, you know, it didn't come to this. But yeah, there was, if I'm not mistaken, something between them. I hear he's holding back letters from his daughter, from Floyd's daughter.
Yeah. How long have you had the letters? I'll go. The ring came back.
And see, yeah, they kind of, he just disappears and he comes back. I read the novel and there was a scene, I don't know if they didn't film it or what, but there was a scene there with Boomerang fighting some of the bad guys or whatever, and that's why he ended up coming back. It wasn't just because he wanted to come back and help. But they kind of, he just shows back up for no real reason.
That was kind of a cool use of his boomerang, using it.
Yeah.
As a drone. Which, surprisingly, there weren't as many boomerang throws. He was using them more as knives.
Yeah.
Throughout this.
I don't know why they went that route with it, but...
I mean, he could have been doing things very much like Deadshot, like banking it off stuff, hitting people with it, coming back to him. Could have had a pretty interesting sequence. Some people kind of complained about this, like the makeup looks good, but he doesn't look really any much bigger than the other guys here.
Right. And I'm wondering if that's one reason they went for Croc instead of King Shark, because Croc, that's probably all just all makeup.
Yeah.
Whereas King Shark would have either been more practical effect or... more CGI.
And maybe just for soul sword.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I do like the fact that she's meeting with the sword.
Yeah, and I can see that too. And it's more of what Killer Croc is before kind of Jim Lee got a hold of him in Hush. We're turning him more into a crocodile.
Right.
He looks more like the lizard as opposed to somebody that's got a really bad skin condition or thing about him that he's still humanoid, but's got crocodile type aspects to him. So
yeah, he started out just with a man with a skin condition.
Right.
And over the years, more and more writers started, or artists or writers started making him more an actual crocodile.
Right.
So.
So I dug that this, that they're staying more to the humanoid version. I might have just cast a bigger person. But I think the makeup looks really good. And yeah, they went for practical effects instead of CG.
Which I always like. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this is all for the movie. Yeah, in the comics, I think they had a brief thing, but yeah, in the comics, he was always in love with a woman named Karen Grace.
Okay.
And that was from the original Task Force X stories back in, what was it, the 60s? Yeah, the Task Force X first appeared in Brave and the Bold right before Just League showed up.
Okay.
Like three issues then, and three issues a couple years later. That I've tried to do on my show, but they're a bit of a slog to get through. And part of the problem was in those stories, a lot of it, there was four members on the team. There was Rick, Karen Grace, and then two other scientists. And Karen and Rick was in love with each other, but the other two scientists also loved Karen, so they're always going on about how they keep their love secret for the team's sake, and... Mm. Again, I like that line, but it's not a Deadshot line.
No, it's a Will Smith line.
Yes. They're smacker on the ass and
I wish you could drink sometime.
Okay.
But she has to come out.
Yeah. Put the gun down.
What do you think of the Enchantress's mannerisms in this? We kept saying ballerina, belly dancer for a while, but what do you think of how she was used to like conjure her spells or whatever she's doing? Another Affleck Batman shot there.
Yep. And here's the Harlequin having a normal life.
Oh, yeah.
With a normal Joker. I don't know about the Enchantress dancing around and all that. I don't know if I like that. It's not really from the comic. It's just that's what they're doing for this. A little silly.
Yeah.
The whole belly dancing aspect of it. Normally I don't mind that, but in this context, yeah, I just didn't care for it. I think it could have been done better.
If I remember right, it's Diablo that pulls everybody out of it, that he knows this isn't real. We had our chance. It's done.
No, we didn't. Right there. Yeah. But I do like the dead shots. His vision or whatever was him killing Batman finally.
Mm-hmm. That line's always kind of just felt forced.
Which one's that?
His lady, you're evil. You are evil.
Yeah. Who's this? Yeah, that's all, I was debating about that line myself.
Now, something I read a couple weeks ago, I think. Well, that's January. It's actually probably November now. That I could have swore I read that another plan that they were going to have is this to be Steppenwolf here instead of her brother.
See, I would have liked that better. Well, I know
I would have too.
I know originally Darkseid was supposed to be in the Justice League movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be two parts, and Darkseid was going to be the big bad villain. And again, like we talked about earlier, I think for the first Suicide Squad movie, it would have been better to have another villain instead of fighting the team.
Because
not only, I mean, they're putting the team together, but they've got to fight the team. So you kind of made your own enemy at this point. But also, if they would have waited, yeah, we could have got to know June, got to know the Sorceress, or I'm sorry, Enchantress.
Right.
Before she goes bad. And, you know, when that turn would have happened, it would have made us actually care for her. Instead of, I don't really know her at this point, so whatever.
Now, this, again, with El Diablo, I didn't know much about this character at all to go, is this even a power that he has?
And like I say, I'm not as familiar. All I'm familiar with is, like I said, his new 52 appearances. So I haven't seen him do this. I'm not saying he couldn't or hasn't. But yeah, El Diablo, I'm not familiar with either. So, and that may be one reason why I liked him a little more out of the cast, because the rest of the group I'm familiar with. I've read them for years. So when they make some of these changes, I'm like, well, that's not the character. El Diablo, he's never struck a chord with me, so I've never really got into him. So if they make changes to him, I couldn't tell you.
So, and I was coming at it from the same way. I was like, all right, if that's what the character can do, fine. Yeah. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with him. It's okay, yeah. I read him some of the new 52 stuff. Now, some there, I know he can't do fire. Maybe he does have an ability. I don't know. I haven't seen it yet, but. And I don't think El Diablo has done as much pre the Suicide Squad movie. So I think he was more of an open character, if you will.
I would not want to be outside when all that debris is spinning around. It's like, oh, crap, here it comes.
Yeah.
Now you pissed her off.
Yeah, so I was looking online real quick. This version of El Diablo didn't appear until 2008.
Okay.
And that was the time frame when I had stopped buying comics and I was reading them online. So yeah, I've kind of missed him.
And it's at this point in the movie, if there are any other heroes out there, especially that this is Hawkman's city. Yeah. He'd have been there at this point.
Yeah. I think that's why they didn't give us that nod of Hawkman somewhere, because yeah, he would have shown up. And that's what I was wondering. Well, where's the other heroes at? But at this point, Superman's dead. Batman is in Gotham being Batman. Wonder Woman's somewhat retired. And we have
not. Yeah, we do know the Flash is active.
The Flash is active. So yeah, because he captured Boomerang. So, but yeah.
But also too, if you're setting up the universe that Superman's just newly active, Wonder Woman's not sure what she's doing, and Batman's trying to take care of Gotham, you really don't have the Flash recruited yet. You don't have an Aquaman.
Right.
Cyborg hasn't had his accident yet. So maybe you could say there is no Hawkman yet.
Right. Hawkman's still hanging out the ocean being a douche bro. Yeah, Barry is still living in the basements or whatever, wherever he was at. Oh, sorry. I got pumped. Oh, sorry.
I did like the sequence with the Enchantress that she's, again, I don't know how comic book accurate it is, but she's quite a good fighter here and is able to take on each of them.
And again, yeah, she doesn't do a whole lot of hand-to-hand fighting. She does more sorcery, casting spells. In fact, I'm trying to think. I haven't seen her do a whole lot of hand-to-hand fighting like this. I thought it was just me. What the hell?
Yeah. What?
See, in the comics, she changes back to June Moon back and forth by saying her name.
Okay.
And that's how they force her to go back, by making her say her name.
Kind of like a Mr. and Mrs. Pedelec. I can't ever say that name.
Shazam. Captain Marvel. Yeah, that type of deal. Lost my pudding. Yes, the little stab her in the heart thing is for the movie.
Okay.
I do like this, that Harley would be the one that would turn on the team, but then she would also be the one that do the unexpected. And so I could buy that from Harley.
Yeah, I can.
You think she's turned on the team, and then she's actually, you know, turning on the bad guy.
And it's still in her best interest to get out of this somehow.
Everyone has to have something to do here at the end.
Right.
Harley uses Katana's sword, throwing her gun to Deadshot to use. All of his wrist gauntlets are out of bullets. Well, he needed that one, but
yeah.
Croc's throwing the explosive into the thing that Boomerang gave to him. Or was it Rick gave to him? Rick gave it to him. Yeah, everyone's got to have their moment here.
Right.
Which I understand what they're going for. I don't know if I like it or not. It's a little forced, I think.
Yeah. We're all a team. We've all got a part of this.
Yeah.
Enchantress messing with his mind.
Yeah, that's very much the Enchantress.
And I mean, I like the shot there that the gun is resting on his daughter's head.
Yeah. Love, hate, written on the barrel.
Yeah. Barrel switches from hate to love.
There goes the hole in the sky. Stops the Cathari from coming through. I mean, an explosion thrown into the hole in the sky stops the hole.
We neutralized it. All right. It's Bella time.
Boomerang finds the heart. He had to have his part in it. And this is another part of the movie I have, another part, a problem I have with the movie. They were stressing that if the enchantress is due to her length, that if her heart gets destroyed, she dies. So he destroys it, but she still, I don't know if they explained that well enough. Did I miss something? Or is it just MacGuffin?
I think it feels a little vague. Like, you can kind of draw conclusions from it, but you can kind of take it a couple different ways if you want to as well.
Okay, there's just, you know, if they kill the heart, Chapters dies, June dies, they're one and the same.
Right.
But apparently not. I guess we fall back to the old unreliable narrator, you know. But they assumed that's what would happen. They were wrong. But you made me, I made you. What?
Right now they're going to fall off a bell tower.
Like that. How are you not dead? Not dead. And that's, I get another Will Smith line.
My wife was waiting for it. Oh, hell no. Espresso machine.
BT.
All right, 10 years off a triple life sentence. Great. It does absolutely nothing for me.
I'm out of here.
Yeah.
This is some fun. Crap. I get that's very much a boomerang. You know, I'm going to walk out of here. And she's, Amanda Waller's like, no, you're not. And he's like, no, I'm not.
I just wanted to try that out.
What does that fit? Didn't fit too well.
Yeah. Oh, we're not playing that anymore? All right, my bad.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that was very much a Captain Boomerang thing.
Yeah.
Make a little frog. Let me see what I can do. Oh, okay. Amanda Waller just stands up to him. I'm like, you know, shut up. We're doing it my way.
Actually, I like that he's teaching her algebra and like all this stuff, but using it like, all right, you know, I'll talk to you about shooting somebody.
Yeah, you're on this building here, and you got a vector this way. Yeah. very much a dead shot, equating math to his real world perspective. See, his daughter in the comic, I think, was a later retcon. Originally, he had a son.
Okay.
Back in the 80s, they had a Fortune Deadshot miniseries, which I covered not too long ago. And he had a son that ended up dying because of his parents. And we get more Deadshot's origins in there and his backstory. And then later on, in one of the rebooted Squad miniseries, I think it was, they gave him a daughter.
Got his BET.
Yeah, the black guy having to have BET. I don't know. Is that stereotyping? Is that, I don't know. Easy go. Deadshot just in a cell. It's very much a Deadshot thing to happen. He tries to screw with Amanda Waller. She puts him in a cell.
Oh, you mean Boomerang? Yeah.
Oh, Boomerang. I mean.
Yeah.
Who did I say?
You said Deadshot.
Oh, Boomerang. I mean.
Yeah. But then it did show Deadshot in the sun.
Yeah.
Maybe that's
fine. He's getting ahead of himself. Here we have the Joker, not dead.
Right.
Well, again, we got to have more Joker in here.
And there was no part of me, once we got to this spot, I thought, okay, Harley's getting out.
See, I'd been fine if they would have cut this out.
Joker right on his... Now, I've seen this three times, and it's the first time I caught the Joker written on his chest.
Oh, I think I noticed that earlier on when I watched it. And the end of it, the Joker and Harlequin.
Yeah.
Written and directed by David Ayer. And we do have one mid-credit scene, I think it was.
I think so.
Post-credit. I forget when it comes in. I know there's a credit scene somewhere.
Oh, yeah. It's after this.
Before the actual credits.
Yeah.
Well, it's had some good music, some good effects.
Which I want to get your opinion on the effects here once we get past the credit scene, because I know if I start talking about it, it's going to pop right up, and I'm going to be like, oh, no.
Yeah, so I was kind of waiting to say too much, because I didn't want to be cut off with the end credit scene.
I think once we get past like the casting and costumes and all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah, once we get past the cast of characters, I think that's where we go.
Before they go to the black screen, if the credits are just rolling.
Right.
Yeah, I love Viola Davis. I thought she did a great job. Jay Courtney, not a fan. There's Croc, Adawolo, yep. Whatever.
Nah, not going to pronounce that.
I'm going to try it. Scott Eastwood. Eastwood? The stupid name's Eastwood. Oh. Sorry, big
call
back.
Don't call me Yella.
Big Back to the Future fan.
Oh, same here. We're just going to roll right into start doing the commentary for Back to the Future when this is over.
All right, I've got the trilogy on.
All right, let's roll.
Press it out.
Yeah, we should be going to black here. That's the scene.
There we go. Suicide Squad.
There we go.
Not a big fan of that logo. I prefer the original Suicide Squad logo a little better. Mm-hmm. But again, that's because I'm old. Here we go.
There we are. I like this, Amanda Waller, Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Now, I have a question in here once we get to the book or the set of papers he's looking at.
Right.
Here, just a moment. Shows the Enchantress and the rest of the Justice League. Like, why is the Enchantress's picture in there? That makes no sense whatsoever.
And we only saw a couple pages. Maybe there's
dossiers of the villains also.
I like this. I like that line. You look tired, stop working at nights.
I like that line. You need to shut it down. I'll do it for you. Because I was... Oh, there we go. So I was wondering at first when him and Amanda were working together, I wasn't quite happy with that because usually Batman's usually threatening Waller in the comics. You said you're a big Batman fan. Issue 10 of the Suicide Squad. And then issue 13, Batman shows up. So, yeah, if you're a fan of Batman, yeah, definitely check out those issues.
I definitely will.
Of the original squad run. And then in, like, issue 40, I believe it is, like 40 through 43 or something like that.
I'm jotting notes down as you talk.
There's a Phoenix Gambit storyline where Amanda Waller gets caught up and goes to prison. They do a one-year jump later. Batman shows up in there also.
So those were 10 and 14?
10 and 13.
13, okay.
13 crosses over for the Just League International 13.
Oh, okay.
In fact, their covers are reversed of one another.
Oh, nice. All right. I've seen those now that you say that. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, if you're a fan of Batman, check out those. And I say it's like 40 through 43, I want to say. I don't know why I'm guessing. I've got the digital comics right here in front of me I could look at real quick. Yeah, 40 through 43, it's the Phoenix Gambit. Batman shows up in there. I think he's on the cover of 40, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, the cover of 40, the first part of the Phoenix Gambit, shows Amanda Waller in her prison cell and Batman just standing over her. It's like a one-year jump. But yeah, that's 10. Verifying as I'm talking. Yeah, in fact, 10 is a fantastic cover. It's a pure white cover, and it's got Batman up against a wall, and Amanda Waller, she's got to be a foot smaller than him, but she's got her finger pointed to his bat emblem, and she's just dressing him down, and Batman's just, like, standing back, like, what the hell?
Oh, I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, and I've
like
seen
I say, that's my one complaint when they try the new 52, and right before that, they try to make Amanda Waller skinnier, more beautiful. That's not Amanda Waller.
She doesn't need to be.
Amanda Waller is a short, heavy-set black woman the younger, the skinnier, the more beautiful Amanda Waller, you're like, well, how did she get where she's at? By sleeping her way to the top? Is she actually has skills? This one here, she stands up to Batman and makes Batman back up.
I mean,
Amanda Waller.
She got where she is for being herself. Like, weight, height, all that stuff doesn't
– Yes.
I mean, my wife says – you know, all the time as we're watching movies, she's like, you know, it's great that there's female characters represented in here, but she's like, every single one's got to be, you know, skinny and a size 2. And she's like, where's the shape? You know, where's the shape for people? Not everyone, you know, looks like this, where you can look up at a screen and go, oh, I can identify with that character. I can see part of me, you know, up on the screen. She's like, not when everybody's a size 0, you know?
Right. And that's what I love about Amanda Waller. She's not the size 0. She is a heavyset woman.
Yeah.
She is very much.
She owns it.
And yeah, like I say, it starts out, the crossover starts in Just League 13, Just League International 13, and then it goes over into Just League 14. It starts in Just League International 13, and then it goes over to Suicide Squad number 13.
So both 13s. Nice.
Yeah. And I say that matching covers.
That's going to be a digital pull as soon as we're done here. Or maybe I'll get lucky. It'll be on the DC Universe streaming app and I can go through
there
as well.
And then I say 40 through 43. I forget how much Batman's in that, but I know he's in the first issue. And I say it does like a one-year jump later.
Okay.
From the previous issue. Yeah, they... Because what it is Amanda Waller was exposed as head of Suicide Squad. She was kicked out, supposedly, and there was someone else putting her in place, but it was just behind the scenes. She was actually still running things. And then during the Janus Directive storyline, which I'm just finishing covering on my podcast, President Bush rearranges things and pets – Sarge still in charge of the entire government espionage and
kicks Amanda down the food chain because he's upset with the way she handled things. And okay. In 39, she's exposed as still leading the Suicide Squad and doing things that maybe she shouldn't have been doing, so she's been in jail. And then 40, I say, starts up a year later.
Okay.
So, yeah, definitely. If you're a fan of Batman, check out those.
I definitely will. Definitely will.
And then the Joker, like, he shows up in the 50s, I think it was, or so. Oh, another one, Batman shows up in, I almost forgot. Or was it? There was a Search for the Atom storyline. Looks like, whoops, issue 60. Does it start? No, 59 is where it starts. Okay. The cover's got Batman, Superman, and Aquaman on it with the Atom running away. So, yeah, that's another where they're doing a search trying to find Ray Palmer, the Atom. And that goes through 59 through, like, 62. And it turns into more of an Atom story. Batman's just in there briefly, but that was another great storyline. But we're not here to talk about the comic. We're here to talk about the movie we just watched. There you go. Special thanks to John Ostrander, Luke McDonald,
Jim Aparo, Mike Barr,
Ross Andrew,
Bill Finger,
Bill Hazzaro, John Byrne,
Bruce Bob Tim, Kane, Bob Kane. Yep.
Bruce Jay Tim. Robinson. That was great. I love when they thank creators. I miss the part that usually upsets me. A lot of time, based on comics there, okay. A lot of times they'll say, you know, based on characters from DC, a lot of these movies and shows try to scrub the fact that it's a comic book.
Right. I like it when it says, you know, based on the comic book characters in DC Comics or Marvel or whatever.
Shown in Superman comics or Yeah. A lot of times I've noticed they try to avoid the comic portion of it. Just don't stop. That's your roots. Quit trying to get away from them.
Right. That is your source material. We won't be watching this movie without the comic books.
Very much so. That's one of my big gripes about these is the fact, they seem to try to get away from the comic roots. When, like you said, that's what these are based off. If it wasn't for the comics, you wouldn't have this material.
Right. And trying to let's ground it in the real world and make it plausible. No. That's fine. If somebody's supposed to be flying around and wearing a bright orange outfit, let them, you know.
Yes.
I mean, I get you can kind of tweak it and go, wow, this screams 1970 from when they're, you know, designed. Like the Scarlet Witch, you know, now we're trying to get to another company. But you can go, all right, I can see that costume may not work anymore. But, you know, you get some elements of it that you can kind of pull off. Even Harley Quinn, if you want to stay away from the rubber or you know, the onesie. Her costume at least was in half and half. Half was one color, half was another. You know, we've seen like some variations there. But then, you know, in some cases, like the Enchantress, it's like complete deviation from where she was. So,
yeah, no, I very much so. I'm like, well, at least give us a nod to the comic. Give it, a lot of people say, well, these comics won't work translated to screen. How do you know if we don't try it?
Right, exactly. I would rather it crash and burn because you tried to really stick close to the source material.
Well, for one, Aquaman. For years, people said that orange costume wouldn't work on screen. I don't know. I thought it looked fantastic in the movie.
It looked beautiful. He stepped out in that, and I was like, that's Aquaman. Yes. You didn't have to – even the Justice League Aquaman had some orange in it. I'm like, okay, I guess you're going to stay away from it. But once James Wan was like, no, we're going to put him in the actual outfit and – if it's on screen and you're staying true to it and you believe it's going to work, the audience will buy it too. If you're doing it for laughs, then it's going to come off cheesy and not be taken seriously.
If you cheap out or like the Captain America movie from the early 90s.
Yes.
That rubber costume, like, well, this is what it looks like. Well, no, that's not what it would look like. That's if you don't take it seriously or if you don't have the money to do it. But you can do these, in my opinion. And maybe it's just I've got a childish brain that enjoys this kind of stuff, but I think a lot of these costumes would work better on screen than people give it credit for.
I do too, and you kind of said it maybe as a play on words, a childish mind. I think at some level, not that you know comics can't be taken seriously, they're for kids, or we've got to make these serious. At some level, the 10-year-old me is in watching these movies. And I'm looking and seeing Batman and Wonder Woman and Flash and Captain Boomerang and Aquaman and going, I remember having action figures of these and watching the Saturday morning cartoons, and now they look like living, breathing, real things. And if you're treating them with the reverence and, you know, dignity that they should be, the audiences will buy the reality that you are putting on screen. But if you're doing it like, well, we just don't think our audience is smart enough to see a character create spells, so we're just going to do it in a silly way.
Yeah.
It's undermining the 80 years, 50 years, whatever the years of the character's history, and throwing it out the window for, well, let's take the easy route out.
Yeah. Well, I'm on a Facebook group, a Unite DC Comics group that, you know, talks about DC Comics, and I'm always complaining about, you know, the inaccuracies in some of these movies, and people, whenever I start doing that, they, well, you want to see you want to see the comic books on the screen? Well, we need to see the stories, but I want to see the comic book characters. I want to see, when I look at the movie, I want to recognize these characters for what I see in the comics. Mm-hmm. And we talked about that briefly earlier, that, you know, some of these characters, you go in there and look, like Deadshot, that doesn't look like a comic book character. I mean, his costume does, but without the costume, Will Smith doesn't look like Floyd.
Right.
Lawton. The Enchantress doesn't look like the Enchantress from the comic. Aquaman with the darker hair, you know, there's a resemblance, but some of these characters, I want to see these characters I've loved and read for all these years in the comic, I want to see them on the screen. I want to see a representation of them. I want to be able to, you know, look at the screen and not have to guess, well, who is that?
Right.
I want to be able to look at the screen and say, oh, that's Deadshot. You know, that's his costume. I could tell. That's Batman. That, you know.
Right. Showing up to the average Joe on the street and then have to guess. Yeah.
Or, yeah, go into the, you know, comic shop. Well, let me get a comic with Hawkeye. That doesn't look like Hawkeye, you know.
Right, right.
It's just, I don't know. But yeah, so the movie's over. It's been over. We've been talking. What are your thoughts on the Suicide Squad at this point, the movie, after having seen it, what, three or four times?
Now that I mean, kind of, it was fun revisiting it. And I think my overall opinion hasn't changed of it since then. I enjoyed it for what it was. It is still the bottom of the list of the DC EU movies for me. But every time, you know, like when everybody's like, okay, rank your movies now that you've seen Aquaman, where does everything fit in? Usually everybody's got Suicide Squad to the bottom, unless you really hate Batman versus Superman. I see people put that at the bottom, but neither here nor there. I always end up saying it, but I still enjoy it. I still like all these movies, even with some of their flaws, and there are some things that really drive me nuts. But I'm like, at least we're trying. We just watched a Suicide Squad movie. There have been umpteen number of Batman movies and Superman movies. We just watched a movie with Killer Croc and Harley Quinn and, you know, the Enchantress. I never would have thought we would have seen those. So I can still put this movie in. It wasn't like I was eye rolling it the whole time, or where you asked me, hey, you want to do a commentary track? And I'm like, right. Oh my God, I can't stand this movie. No. I don't want to. I was excited to, you know, getting a chance to talk to you finally and just have fun watching a movie and going, hey, here's some cool comic book characters that I don't know. And because of this movie, I'm going to go read some Suicide Squad comics that I haven't read before. So I dug it. It's still at the bottom of my list, but it's not a bottom of my list where it's not a Batman and Robin where I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah. I never watch that movie anymore. There's still enough in this that I can pull out and enjoy and go, man, I haven't seen a Suicide Squad movie in a while. Let's put that in and watch it. And I'll get to the end of it and I'll have the same reaction and go, that was good. You know, wasn't great. Wasn't jumping up and down, but at least there were some character moments in there that I enjoyed throughout the experience.
Very good. I've seen this the first time sitting through the extended edition. I don't know if the extended edition is any better than the theatrical.
To me, like the extended edition of Batman versus Superman, I went, oh, okay. You really shouldn't have cut that out. That makes more sense. This, I feel, is the same movie. It's just a couple longer scenes. It's not adding anything to it. So if you would have said, well, we're going to watch the theatrical cut, I would have said, oh, okay. because that's how I experienced it. It's not adding anymore, but having a scene or two extra, I was fine with that.
See, I think that one that we talked about, that one scene with Harley Quinn Harley Quinzel shooting the guy in the truck, that kind of detracts a little bit.
Yeah, and I can see why they cut that out.
Yeah.
I go, okay, that's not needed for her character. That actually makes her look worse than what she currently is.
But yeah, overall, I enjoyed it. I see, like you, it's the bottom of the DCU pile. I'm trying to think, this would be at the bottom of the DCU movies. Unfortunately, being a Suicide Squad fan, having a Suicide Squad podcast, I wanted to love this. In fact, every time I go into, I want to go in loving it, but I would probably give it a C.
That's C. I'd probably give it a C plus.
I don't think it actually failed.
Yeah. There's still enough for me to enjoy it where it's not in the D category.
Right.
I just remember sitting in the theater going, I can't believe I'm watching this. Yes. I can't believe this is a real thing. Like even the little drops of Batman popping in, like there's Batman and Deadshot on the screen together. Like, are you kidding me right now? There's the Flash and Captain Boomerang. Are you kidding me right now? This is what I kind of kept saying through it. And then the movie would do something wonky, and I'm like, are you kidding me right now? You know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, so you've seen Amanda Waller on the screen. I never thought I'd see the wall on the big screen. So
I think for those things, this is still, regardless of people want to write about the DCEU, and we've been living in a Marvel world for so long. I think at the end of the day, I'm just starving for any content that I can get, because I hang my hat on DC. These are the characters that I love. Yes, I want them done just like I read them. But sometimes at the end of the day, I may take what you give me, because if I don't get that, then I'm not getting anything. And maybe that's a bad attitude to have, but that's just kind of how I feel.
Well, see, one thing I've been saying is that as much as I make me complain about some of these movies, this is a great time to be a geek. Mm-hmm. Because, again, I remember the dark times of the 80s and 90s. I mean, we had the Superman, the movie. That was fantastic. Superman 2. We had, Superman 3. Okay. Superman 4. Wow. And then we had Batman, the 89 Batman. That was really good for what it was. Batman Returns. Okay. And it started going downhill from there. We had the Captain America movie, the Punisher movie from the early 90s. We didn't have a whole lot of this. So what we had, we were grateful for. Now we're in an age where, we got the CW, two, three nights a week, they've got, comic book movies on there, or TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
We've got, usually two or three, four Marvel movies a year. We got, an occasional DC movie. We got the DC live stream or the DC streaming service where they got, all this old DC property showing up.
And then new stuff, there's Titans. There's going to be Swamp Thing. Stargirl's getting her own show. So it's like what do they say? It's an embarrassment of riches.
Yes. I said, I wasn't a fan of the Titans. I love the George Perez Titans comic, Teen Titans comic. Wasn't happy with the Titans on the streaming service. But Doom Patrol looked awesome. Swamp Thing. So, if there's something you don't like, I don't care for the Titans, there's plenty more out there for me right now.
Right.
There's all the, you don't like one movie, that's all right. In a couple months, you're going to get another one, And
right. If this would have come out in the 80s, that would probably been it. Done. Yeah. We'll see in 9 years,
Yeah.
And maybe we might try something.
And we would have loved it because, we aren't getting very much, so let's enjoy what we can.
Yeah.
But, now we've got so much coming out. We've got so much material out there that it's a great time to be a geek because we have so much to choose from. There's all these animated projects on TV. There's so much. I don't have time to watch everything. That's how much, that's out there that it's just a great time. It's just – I had like Gotham. I watched the first few seasons of that, and I started getting backlogged on that, so I stopped that just because it was okay. It was a little too different for me, but that's okay. I got enough that I'm not really missing it. And it's just a great time. And like I say, overall, this movie, it's not what I wanted. It
maybe a little better than the last time I watched it. Not that the extended cut helped any. But yeah, it borders right there in about a C range, I would think. It's I wanted this to be a fantastic movie. I wanted this to be the Avengers or, you know, top tier movie. But we've got a Suicide Squad movie. They're still talking about doing a sequel. I'm hoping the sequel turns out better than this was. But again, I didn't hate it.
Yeah. If nothing else, if this is a launching point where they end up riding the ship by the end, I'm fine, you know.
Right.
Like the old saying, let's throw mud to the wall and see what sticks. If there were enough parts of this that I think worked to get it to the C where you can go, you've got enough here, just trim some of the fat and the padding that you were doing to it and maybe pull back some of the, you know, like just the tattoo stuff. We won't get into it since we just talked about a lot of it. But
right.
I think you can make a second one work and go, okay, this is what we were trying to do.
Yeah, I think part of the problem with this was this came out after Deadpool. This came, you know, and there were DC, and a lot of people yell at me when I say this, but DC seems to be running behind. They're trying to catch up to Marvel.
Yeah.
And they're trying to follow in Marvel's footsteps, but they've already messed up from the gate. They can't. Marvel's got 10 years out there.
Yeah.
They need to not worry about what Marvel's doing and focus on their own. Don't look at, you know, Deadpool had this toy unicorn or whatever it was that Deadpool was running around with. Let's give one to Boomerang. Don't copy what Marvel's doing. Marvel got its own thing going on. Marvel's doing, you know, was doing great in my opinion. Don't worry about them. Focus on your own universe. Focus on your own movies and do what you can do.
I mean, I was always looking at it too, that, you know, Marvel's got 10 years on you. Fine. At some point, like, Marvel is closer to the end of their rope than DC is. So Marvel's eventually going to go away or go into a different phase. And I'm not saying that bad.
Right.
I'd have looked at DC and go, now you're the game in town. You have been building your universe and your slate of movies. Don't try and get to the end of where Marvel is. Just start fresh and do your thing.
Take your time.
Yeah.
Well, I say that's like I've said, that's part of their problems. They jump around. Like I say, Green Lantern was going to start their movie, extended movie universe, but that bombed. Okay, well, it's not that. Let's do it this way then. And they won't pick a direction and go. They keep changing mid-flight, which makes a weaker product, in my opinion.
Yeah. There's not a cook. There's not a Kevin Feige or somebody that's that I have the playbook and this is how we're going to map this out. It's a lot of knee-jerk reactions. I'm glad comic-wise they're not doing that, but it's a poor business model. Like, today we're making tacos. Oh, no, we're going to do pizza. Now we're going to do barbecue wings.
Yes.
You know, pick a thing and do it.
Well, like we talked about originally, the promotion for the Justice League movie makes it sound like they were going to do all seven characters, Unite the Seven.
Right.
And all this promo poster out. Darkseid was supposed to be the main villain. It's going to be two movies. Old midstream, let's change it. Now Steppenwolf's the villain. Now it's only going to be one movie. They keep changing midstream, which, yeah, like I said, it's not helping them any. But like I say, I am enjoying, like I say, I like the Marvel movies better, but I am a DC guy. I prefer DC comics. I've always been more of a DC guy. But as far as the cinematic universe, Marvel, like I said, they've got someone that's ahead of their films, and they're trying to keep everything in line. And that's one thing people have complained about. With what was it, Ant-Man? They had Edgar Wright
on it.
And was supposed to do it, and he backed. From what I hear, he backed out because he didn't want to tie in. He didn't want to follow the Marvel plan.
Right.
And a lot of people, well, you need to let him do what he wants to do. If you do that, you end up with movies like The Suicide Squad. If you're going to have a cinematic universe, you need to have a chief or a head chef or whatever phrase you want to use. You need to have someone with the, as you said, the playbook, and you need to keep people within that playbook. Otherwise, it's not going to tie in properly, and that can ruin not only the movie, but it can end your franchise.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why you have editors and group editors in comics, where you have somebody holding the continuity playbook where you go, no, Superman does not use a shovel to dig, you know, or whatever that is, you know.
Right.
Superman doesn't eat chocolate pudding. He only likes vanilla. As silly as that sounds, there are some things like,
Definitely.
Harley Quinn does X, Y, Z. She does not do I, J, and G, you know.
Like in the movie you just watched, Deadshot. Deadshot would have taken that shot. He wouldn't have missed Harley Quinn when she was getting away on purpose.
Right.
And Boomerang would not have congratulated him. Those are, you know, if you have a playbook, you know, this is the way the character should be written. But, again, a lot of those are minor nitpicks. Some of them are, again, being a fan of the comics, they're a little bit bigger for me. But for the average moviegoer, a lot of that they probably didn't notice, didn't care about.
Right. I think that's the bigger thing. Knowing that it's a movie and it's not a comic book, I tend to be a little bit more forgiving and go, okay, I can get it at the same time I don't, but I'm not getting too bent out of the shape. And I don't want to come out of the theater going, oh, that character wouldn't have done that, and be so mad that it's not like the thing that I'm reading that I'm just going to crap all over it and go, okay, how does it work as a film? Was I able to enjoy it, or am I in my continuity head so much that nothing is ever going to live up to it because I'm, you know, like when people are saying, you know, I want him to, you know, remake, you know, The Dark Knight Returns. I'm like, I don't want him to do that. I know how that story ends. You can thematically put elements in it, but I don't want to be telegraphed and go, oh yeah, I read that book 20 years ago, you know,
right.
Take some of the license, the little cues where you can, but as long as the characters are acting how they should, then I'm okay with the story that you're telling.
Yeah, that's why I say where I complain about some of these people, like, well, you want to reproduce the comic exactly? Well, no, I don't want to see the storyline I read reproduced, because it's not going to be, you know, they're not going to do as well as the comic. But yeah. I do want to see the actual characters. And if they throw, see, like in Spider-Man 2 with Tobey Maguire, where he throws his costume in the trash, mm-hmm. he's walking away. That's out of the comic. I love when they do things like that.
Yes.
They take these little scenes, and if they can make it fit, make it right, throw these scenes in there. I love that.
Yeah, just as simple as Harley Quinn in her jester's outfit, and she held the mallet for a brief moment before grabbing the bat. I'm like, that was a nice little character moment where you could go, oh, Harley Quinn normally wears a bat, you know, has a mallet. You know, that was her jester's outfit that she wore. So I was a little more forgiving of the outfit that she had.
Yes.
Not very practical, but she was literally in that original outfit for like 30 seconds.
Yeah. So we talked about her short shorts earlier. Did they CGI make them longer? Theatrical, it was a bit longer. And I noticed that there were pictures of her short shorts and then some of the bit longer ones. So I was wondering, did they do CGI, or how come there's the difference there, if you knew offhand?
I think just from what I remember reading, going into the theatrical cut, that they thought it was too cheeky for the character. So anytime that she was bending over, her butt was to the camera, they always – like there's no cheek. So it'd be almost the equivalent to volleyball shorts. You know, you could still see things, but you're not actually seeing
as much as you saw here.
Right. There's no flesh. So in the extended cut, they took all that out, so it's, you know, full cheek Harley Quinn.
Okay. And yeah, if you're going for the short shorts, might as well, but
right. I mean, it's like then why did you put her in that to begin with if you're just going to turn around and cover it up?
And again, this isn't a movie really for young kids.
Right.
So I don't have a problem with the more cheeky. If you're going to pet her in that little outfit, might as well go for it.
Right.
And it's just kind of, again, that part of their problem of doubting themselves.
Yeah.
They filmed it this way, and then, okay, you know what? That's a little too short. Well, the entire, okay, let's go and make a little longer CGI in some of these scenes. So, yeah, I don't know. I say that whole sense we just talked about there is DC's problem, is that they can't pick a direction and stick to it. Anyways, well, I guess we've talked about the movie. We've gave our likes, dislikes. Do you have anything else? Any other questions or comments or?
No, other than just it's about right where it stayed for me. I enjoyed it as much as I did the first time I saw it. I didn't enjoy it. Did not enjoy it any less. It wasn't like on multiple viewings, I'm finding more and more things that are wrong with it. So that made me happy that, all right, my strong C is still there. And it's something that I have no problem going back to. So it's good. I'm at least glad it was made. And I hope it's a step in the right direction.
And like I say, every time I've watched it, it's gone down lower and lower. So I was a little afraid of watching it this time. But having said that,
oh, maybe I've hit rock bottom with it at this point, because it wasn't any worse than the last few times I've seen it. So I enjoyed it for what it was. Like I said, it's not perfect, but it wasn't horrible. I enjoyed watching it. I enjoyed watching with you and talking about it.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. I'm glad you asked. And do you want to do another one of these sometime? We find another Suicide Squad movie? That'd be great.
Yeah, definitely. I may have to get with you. Maybe do some other movie. Do a Back to the Future.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be fun.
I'll do it with my headcast or something. My Head Speaks podcast. Maybe we'll do Back to the Future one of these days. Because, yeah, I enjoyed this.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely sign me up. It's good chatting with you.
All right, Robert, before I let you go, why don't you all tell people where to find you out real quick one last time?
Yeah, you can find me over at thebatmanuniverse.net, the two podcasts. If you just type Everyone Loves, you're going to find Robin Everyone Loves the Drake, and then the new podcast, Everyone Loves Young Justice. I'm on Twitter at ELTD Podcast and ELYJ Podcast. And if you just want to talk to me, Rob, you can find me at DrummerRob10 on Twitter.
All right, Rob. Well, again, once again, thank you very much for spending your afternoon watching The Suicide Squad with me and talking with me about it. And we'll definitely have to get together and do something like this again one of these days.
Yeah, definitely.
And to people out there, if you enjoyed this episode, let me know. Send an email to TaskForceX@Headspeaks.com. Again, TaskForceX@Headspeaks.com. Or you can visit the Facebook page, the website, which is TaskForceX.Headspeaks.com. Let me know what you think of this episode of my and Robert's review of The Suicide Squad. Do you agree? Are we crazy? Let us know what you think. But that's going to do it for this time. Join us next month. We rejoin our look at the comics. And until then, squadmates, dismissed.
Listen to another great episode of Task Force X. I can also be found rambling on my main headcast of Head Speaks, where I rant and rave about movies, comics, geek stuff, and whatever is bugging me.
Mate, you just out crazy the Joker.
Well, I tried, Boomer, but anyways, my home on the internet is at headspeaks.com. HEADSPEAKS.com. Links to my blog, which contain follow-up information to this and every headcast, can be found there. Both Task Force X and Headspeaks are on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at headspeaks.com under Headcasts. Please feel free to email me any questions, comments, or concerns to TaskForceX@Headspeaks.com. And if you want to record a message, you can send it to me at TaskForceX@Headspeaks.com, and I'll play it on the air. I'm also on Facebook at Task Force X, and also on Google Plus, you can look for Task Force X under people and pages. All titles and characters discussed are owned and copyrighted by DC Comics. I claim no ownership to the Suicide Squad, Checkmate, or Task Force X. I'm just a big fan, wanting to spread the Task Force X love with everyone else. DC Comics can be found on the web at dccomics.com. Be sure to visit your local comic shop and look for Suicide Squad and Checkmate Comics. And while you're there, see what else they have that may interest you.
Mother.
Well, make sure you join us here next time for another fun-filled headcast from your friendly neighborhood, Brother Head. In the meantime, I'll see you in the funny pages.
Yes, please!